Now we can play ball.
Okay.
With that, Madam Clerk, would you please read any changes to our agenda this morning?
Changes to today's agenda. Added items on closed session pending litigation under A, conference with legal counsel existing litigation. Number 14, Save the Park versus County of San Luis Obispo et al. Number 15, County of San Luis Obispo versus Andre et al. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. Under withdrawn items on consent is B3, submittal of a resolution accepting the exchange of property tax revenue and annual tax increment for annexation number 70 to the City of San Luis Obispo, Bishop Knoll Estate. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting this item be withdrawn for further review. Amended items on consent is B18. The following parcel maps have been received and filed. Are received and have satisfied all conditions of approval that were established in the public hearing on their tentative maps. A, Tract 2518, a proposed subdivision resulting in 8 lots by Patrick E. Jones and Leslie F. Jones, located on Old County Road, Templeton, 1st District. B is CO-04-0041, a proposed subdivision resulting in 4 lots by Oakview Development, Inc., located on Aloma Way, Napomo, 4th District. C is Tract 2706, a proposed subdivision resulting in 5 lots by Javed and Darvin Sani, located on Las Tablas Road, Templeton. Reject the offer of dedication without prejudice to future acceptance. Approve a resolution to accept the relinquishment of rights of ingress and egress along Las Tablas Road, 1st District. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting that the title of the item B18A on the cover sheet be amended to include the following language. Reject the offer of dedication without prejudice to future acceptance. Act on the resolution to approve an open space easement agreement. Amended items under hearing is C3. It's a hearing to consider an appeal by Donald Carney of the Subdivision Review Board's disapproval of a request for a tentative parcel map using the transfer of development credit programs to subdivide an existing 40-acre parcel into 2 parcels of 20 acres each. The proposed project is within the agricultural land use category and is located at 4242 Las Tablas-Willow Creek Road, approximately 3.5 miles west of the community of Templeton. First District, recommend denial of the appeal. Staff is requesting this item be amended by adding the attached pages, which were inadvertently left out of the staff report. And those are all the changes to today's agenda.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. With that, I will entertain a motion for the presentations in front of us this morning.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Ovitt, seconded by Supervisor Lenthal. All those, roll call, please.
Mr. Ovitt.
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal.
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye. With that, Supervisor Bianchi, would you please do the first honors?
And yes, and I'm not sure who is here representing
this. With us this morning is Gay Galvin, President of School Board Association, and John Barnhart, Assistant Superintendent. If you would come forward, please. You can each take one of the podiums if you wish to do so.
This is a resolution proclaiming January 2006 as School Board Recognition Month in San Luis Obispo County. Whereas the mission of the public schools is to meet the diverse educational needs of all children and to empower them to become competent, productive contributors to a democratic society and an ever-changing world. And whereas local school board trustees are strong advocates for public education and are responsible for communicating the needs of the local district to the public and the public's expectations to the district. And now therefore be it proclaimed that the Board of Supervisors of the County of San Luis Obispo, State of California, do hereby proclaim the month of January 2006 as School Board Recognition Month in the County of San Luis Obispo. Be it further resolved that the board urges all citizens to join them in recognizing the dedication and hard work of local school board trustees and in working with them to support an education system that meets the needs of both today's and tomorrow's children. With that, if you'd come forward.
Thank you. you would like to say a word and then maybe introduce other school, local school members that are here for representing different school, either one of you.
I would just like to thank the board for this resolution. Too many people are not involved in their schools until it affects them personally. But school board members are very dedicated people. In San Luis Obispo County, we have 63 elected school board members serving 12 districts. And all of those board members are very dedicated and really believe in the public education system and work for the good of the children and the students. I would also like to say that some people don't realize there are school districts who have a larger budget than the city they're in. So we have a lot of responsibility. The one thing that school boards cannot do that other elected boards can do is enact or draft and enact legislation. We can't pass any laws. Our hands are pretty tied. But we do the best we can with what we get, and we really appreciate this resolution.
Thank you, Ms. Galvin.
Would you like to recognize a fellow board member that...
Would all the board members who came today and superintendents, would you all stand, please? Are you going to introduce Georgie?
Yes.
Okay.
On behalf of the Superintendent of County Schools, Julian Crocker, who is unable to be here today, is out of the county representing our county. I would like to thank the Board of Supervisors for this very special honor. As you know, sitting in these chairs, that a board deals with a lot of very complicated and many times controversial issues, and school boards are no exception to that at an even more local level. And been an observer, sometimes sitting in a chair over here, of probably 24 years of these meetings, I can tell you that they are a dedicated bunch who work very long hours in the public interest. And I, as a representative of the quote system, wish to give them a special tribute for the many long hours and dedicated service they provide us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I do have resolutions for each school district that I will give to those of you who are here, and John can take the rest back to the county office for him to get.
Mr. Sajjan, I want to bring up one other thing, and I'm not sure that many people are aware of it, but I was privileged, in 96 I think it was, that we put together a coalition between the County Supervisor Association, League of California Cities, and the State School Board Association. Today, that organization is still operating. It is not a political action group. It is basically a group designed to show how you can collaborate between the three agencies within a community and the programs they've done, and there's been a lot of success stories, and it's still existing. And it's been a privilege to watch it happen.
Thank you, Supervisor Robert. Supervisor Bianchi?
Yes, I just wanted to comment that, in my opinion, you know, parents have the most important occupation, because if there were no parents, there would be no children. But that after parents, that those involved in education in our society are probably the most important people. And I really do appreciate those on the school boards, teachers, anyone involved in the education of our children. Because if our children aren't educated, the future of our country is pretty dire. So congratulations and thank you very much.
Thank you. It gives me great pleasure, and it's quite an honor to read the next resolution myself, recognizing Georgia O'Connor, longest serving school board trustee in San Luis Obispo County. Georgia, would you please come forward, please? You're welcome to bring the entire board with you. Following here is Ms. Deb Flores, the superintendent of Lucia Mar School District, Eric Howell, president of the chair of the trustees, And with us also, Ms. Mills, might as well you come forward too, Donna Mills. And I did see...
Mr. Boffman is here.
Give me a minute. I see where he is. I'm very familiar to him. But as I do my best introducing ladies first, we have a formal member of the Lucia Mar School Board of Trustees, Gigi Soto. Would you come forward? I know you're dressed for the occasion, so no embarrassment here. And following Ms. Soto is Mr. Alf Boffman, the immediate past president of the Board of Trustees. Now, I'm not going to bother the next gentleman who means so much to Georgie, and I often introduce him as Uncle Bill. That's the Irish part in me. That's Uncle Bill O'Connor sitting way in the back and with some foot problem. I'm not going to ask you to be bothered to come up front. And also with us, Pat and Mary O'Connor. Would you just stand and be recognized as a family members of Georgie O'Connor? Thank you all for being here. With that, allow me to read this resolution. Whereas providing for the education of school-age children is a fundamental duty of government, and whereas locally elected boards of trustees play an important and vital role in public education, and whereas the service of these committed men and women represents countless hours invested in deliberating important decisions about curriculum, budgets, personnel, and other matters that affects parents, students, teachers, and citizens throughout San Luis Obispo County. And whereas Georgie O'Connor has served on the Board of Trustees in service to the South County community since 1961. I wish I had known you that long.
Almost.
But I was only 10 years old and someplace. First on the Royal Grande School Board, and then since 1965 on the Lucia Mar Unified School District Board of Education. And whereas for over four decades, she has demonstrated her support of education and dedicated service on behalf of future citizenry. And whereas her tireless devotion to children champions the cause of public education and the community she serves. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors of the County of San Luis Obispo, State of California, do hereby express their admiration to Georgie O'Connor for over 40 years of service as a school board trustee, and recognize her commitment and dedication to the students in the South County community. Would you please come forward and accept this resolution? Georgie, you're welcome to say a word, and we'll give the other ladies and gentlemen with you a chance to say a word or two about you.
Very few of you ever find me without words to say, but I want to thank you very, very much for this honor. There have been the ups and the downs, but the ups are better than the downs, and I think that everyone in here that has ever dealt with any children know that it's a pleasure, even so sometimes it's really a mess. But thank you again very, very much for the supervisors giving me this honor. Thank you.
Well deserved.
On behalf of the Lucia Mar Unified Board of Education, I'd like to present these and previous boards, I'd like to present these roses to Georgie O'Connor and thank her for her service.
I know other people want to say some words, and I'm the newcomer on the block. I've known Georgie for 18 months, and what I've come to learn in that short period of time, today you're recognizing all school board members. Georgie exemplifies, I think, and models the ideal in school board service. She is incredibly dedicated. I think from the time she gets up to the time she goes to bed, she's thinking and dealing with school district matters, mainly because her phone never stops. But she's just an incredible lady. Way back when, there were very few women on school boards. She paved the way. She's told me some of those stories. And I just have great admiration and respect for her. And we feel very fortunate in our district to have benefited from her years of service with us. So thank you for taking this time to honor her.
Ms. Flores, as much as it is my pleasure, I need your, and I know you personally, I need your name for the record.
Dr. Deborah Flores, I'm the superintendent of the district.
And the previous speaker was Mr. Eric Howell.
Mr. Eric Howell, board president.
And
so congratulations, George.
Please, others that want to say a word, please come forward and give us your name for the record, and you're welcome to take all the time in the world. This lady is very deserving.
I just want to say, Mom, we love you, and thank you for all the years.
And that was Gigi Soto.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And she's 10 days older than I am.
And that was Al Buffman.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you all for coming. And you don't have to stay. I just want to especially thank Uncle Bill for being here. As often as Georgie gets busy with her civic duties, always somebody left behind to keep themselves busy without their significant other, in this case, a lifetime member. So Uncle Bill, on behalf of the South County community and the school district, I want to thank you. And thank the children as well, Pat and Mary. And thank you all for being here today. Okay, our next resolution will be read by Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This resolution proclaims February 2006 as Grand Jury Awareness Month in San Luis Obispo County. Is there a representative of the grand jury? Come forward. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas the civil grand jury is made up of 19 citizens who serve the area of the County of San Luis Obispo for 1 year after qualifying by the judges of the Superior Court from a list of volunteer applicants and final selection by a random drawing. And whereas the responsibility of this grand jury is to ensure that government entities and prisons under its jurisdiction are performing with efficiency, effectiveness, honesty, and impartiality. And whereas the grand jury primarily relies on public awareness and responsiveness for its reports of findings and recommendations, now therefore be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim February 2006 as the Grand Jury Awareness Month in order for all citizens to become better acquainted with the purpose of the jury, to give attention to the grand jury's reports to the public, and to actually participate in the grand jury process. Thank you.
Like to say a word.
Thanks. We'd appreciate it if you'd like to say a few words.
Good morning. I'm Don Blythe. I'm the president of the former Grand Jury Association of San Luis Obispo County, and this is Hetty Damery. She is the current setting foreperson of the grand jury. And we wanted to thank you this morning on behalf of both of our organizations for this declaration. The grand jury counts on the support of the Board of Supervisors, and they count on it heavily because what you do for the grand jury is to put some teeth, I guess, into what the grand jury does. Because when the grand jury brings forth its report each year, they come forth with recommendations and findings, and without the support of the Board of Supervisors, very honestly, nothing takes place. But what you can do with the support that you give is turn those recommendations into actions. And actions in our community helps improve the community we live in. And so on behalf of both of us, we'd just like to say thank you for that support, from the past support, for your current support, for your future support, and hopefully even for your increased support. So Hetty, you have something you want to add.
Yes, thank you. On behalf of the 19 members of the current sitting grand jury, I thank you for recognizing grand juries in general, and ours in particular. And I'd also like to take this opportunity to encourage members of the public who live in this county to consider what they're going to do with the next year of their lives. people should contact the jury commissioner's office if they have any interest in serving on the next grand jury. I have served for 2 years now, find it a very rewarding experience, and I know that at the end of that year, if they choose to serve, they will feel an enormous sense of pride in having served their community and also learned a lot about their local government. So thank you again for the recognition. We hope to do a good job for you this year.
Thank you. Dr. Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment that in the 1 year that I've served on the board, we have acted on a number of recommendations that the grand jury has made, and I think without those recommendations, we may not have addressed the issues that were raised. So I want to thank all of the members of the grand jury for their efforts and participation, and also the community at large that alert the grand jury to issues out there that may not come to our attention any other way. So you do serve a valuable purpose in county government. I've seen the results of it, and I personally thank you very much.
Thank you. Supervisor Bianchi?
Yes, I always comment that that's how I got involved in government, was serving on the 84-85 grand jury, and I got hooked and on government, and look what happened. So please consider serving on the grand jury. It's an extraordinarily rewarding experience, and it was fabulous. It still is. So thank you.
Thank you. With that, I want to congratulate all the recipients of resolutions this morning. That was the end of resolutions for this morning. With that, we'll continue with our agenda. Next item is public comment period, and the first speaker is Eric Greening, followed by Bill Bookout.
Good morning. I'm Eric Greening. I'd like to bring your attention to what a year or two ago we seemed to have finally achieved as a standard practice, but which now seems to be eroding. That is that whenever you hear an appeal, part of the agenda packet for that item should include the minutes of the hearing the appeal emerges from. Ideally, it should also include minutes of any local advisory committee meetings involved with that particular item. You have some excellent minute takers serving entities, such as the Planning Commission and Subdivision Review Board, and should take advantage of their skills. More to the point, if you're going to be making an informed decision on appeal issues, you should know what issues came up in public testimony and in the discussion of the body whose action is being appealed. It gives a more three-dimensional picture. I know this isn't the time to talk about items on today's agenda, but if you have trouble finding this important component of your information base in appeal items before you today or other days, you might start asking for this. It should be provided routinely. I recognize that sometimes the timing is such that only draft minutes are available, but we're talking about enlightenment here. You don't want to make your decisions in the dark. But these are usually at least 99% accurate and are needed to flesh out the picture. This will become particularly important if you receive an appeal of the Planning Commission's denial of steam generator replacement at Diablo Canyon and associated structures and uses. The Planning Commission's hearing lasted 12 hours and covered many more topics than the appellants may feel they need to touch on. It is important both for due process and for informed decision-making that you fully understand the context of the making of the decisions you are revisiting. That is what minutes can provide. Again, please start asking for them, and good luck making wise decisions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Bill Bookout, followed by Ann Catcherside.
Bill Bookout, Oceano, Oceano Nursery. January 2nd, my nursery flooded with a foot and a half of water in my nursery. Highway 1, 13th Street, as most people are familiar, floods. January 17th, I brought a packet to the Board of Supervisors request to have some information put on the agenda. That's probably not required, but I do want you to pay attention to the packet that I've got you. It has a lot of relative information. As an owner of a business that takes most damage of the flooding, I can no longer continue to do business without immediate action. Everyone has passed blame since my first time my business flooded in 2001. The problem has existed prior to this, I assume since 1984. I'm not closing my business down. My business, I developed it for the community of Oceano. It's part of Oceano. It's the future of Oceano. It's a good, healthy thing. But I need the board's help. In the packet that I've given you here, you will find a letter from OCSD, Phil Davis, regarding a pipe that was run into the Oceano Drainage Basin Railroad property. In this letter, you're going to see that that pipe was run into county property. I don't believe there's an easement for the railroad station property where this pipe was ran initially, blocked off, and then ran into the railroad pipe. That needs to be addressed. There's been no flood control down there. That pipe has caused tremendous amounts of sedimentation since 1984 when it was put in. No maintenance, flooding, backup. OCSD needs to take some responsibility. I'm hoping that the Board of Supervisors will help in that. Supervisor Cacho, your help has been greatly appreciated in the past. August 21st, 2002, you wrote a letter to Caltrans' Greg Albright. Greg Albright, and you brought up the safety, and you've been very helpful in the past on this. You brought up safety. Greg Albright, Caltrans, wrote you back. In Greg Albright's letter, ultimately he has said that water runs uphill and that the airport is the same level as Highway 1 along with the levee bank. I provided a letter to our clerk. I only had one copy. You should pay some attention to this. 1988, Caltrans. We had a specific plan that brought up Oceano. We had flooding surveys. 1988, Caltrans developed a drainage plan for this intersection in Oceano. It was never enacted on. This would have corrected the problem. Safety. Last but not least, before my time is up, Caltrans removed a bike lane in 2002, county curb and bike lane that the county had put in. I've brought this up before. After that, a 13-year-old girl was hit on our highway. We need your help. The future of Oceano depends on you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brookout. And for your information, sometime in March, I asked Public Works to come back to this board and revisit the issue of flooding, and I'll have them to look, even though this corner is a number of jurisdictions are involved within this corner, ourselves, Caltrans, Railroad Crossing, possibly Oceano Community Service District. And any letters you might have today, you might want to be sure that we all supervisors have copies. I have mine. So if you make four more copies for other supervisors, especially one for the clerk, or if you give one to the clerk and she'll make copies for the rest of us, I'd like that to be part of our addressing the concerns come March.
Each of these you received with a stamp up here.
Okay.
So each supervisor should have these. I would ask one thing. Please bring a dump truck down there and a backhoe. It'll take a half hour to remove some sedimentation. That's all. And the pipe that OCSD ran into the railroad culvert. They should have never put this pipe in there. These packed papers will tell you about that.
Let's look at it and bring some professional advice to the board and see where we go with that.
March, my nurse will flood it by then. So.
Is Ann here? Catch your sight if I'm saying your name correctly. Ann will be followed by Dane Sanser.
Okay. Yes, I'm Ann Ketcherside from Atascadero, and I want this to be said for the record. I'm here speaking up for Rose and William Vedder. I am their manager. Almost 2 years ago, 6501 Via Avenue, a 6-acre property, was per se taken by the county to do some cleanup. The bettors were not allowed to make income. Today, I can see that I have painters ready to go on the building, electricians. We could be bringing at least on the 6.5 acres, $4,700 a month. They are losing that $4,700 a month. Mr. Vetter has had a heart attack. They have a lot of other lawyer bills because of the different situations in their life that I'm trying to straighten up and work with attorneys. But the reason I'm here today is because the bettors have done everything that the county has asked them to do. I have given each one of you a copy of just part of the settlement. The page 4, section B, states that the remainder of the money that is in the $60,000 that was put for the cleanup should go to the bettors. And their attorney is now trying to get his hands on it. And Catherine Burchard has said to me, you know what? If you try to push to get the money for the bettors, and if you look at page 4B, that's what the county, I was in the meeting when the county made this settlement. The bettors have put $24,000 of their own money, plus out of the $60,000 was that was their money, another $46,000. TRC, who is doing the cleanup, I have two 400-page books on the cleanup, and it is really a clean property. TRC said to me, I don't even understand why they're making you guys spend another $24,000 to go looking for, as Catherine Burchard stated, anything you can find. Well, I'll tell you what, I put the blood of Jesus on that 6 acres every single day, and they're not going to find anything because 7-8 years ago there was another person that was by the state came in and checked that property and said it was the cleanest junkyard in all of California, and we have given that report to the county also. So I'm here on behalf of the bettors asking that when the remainder of the money, which will probably be in the next 2 or 3 weeks, the check is made out, it's about $14,000, and they can sure use it with Mr. Vetter's heart attack. He can't even get his phone for his pacemaker thing at home, that is given directly to the bettors and not to the bettors slash their attorney. Their attorney to date has received over $22,000 from them. So, and he's only done good on this one case. So if the county council decides to make the check to the vetters slash attorney, then we will have to sue the county. And, you know, I'm coming here to let you know before the check is written out, which is probably 2 or 3 weeks away. And also, maybe if you can talk to Catherine Burchard and her people that work with her, and just let them know that this land is clean. It's time to give it back to the vetters.
Thank you, ma'am, but your time is up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dane Sanser, followed by Ann Ream.
Dane Sensor, Napomo, California. Please excuse my appearance. I usually don't, you know, stand this way in front of. Dear Board of Supervisors, I make this statement with all respect, facts, and absolute candor. This county was rated and voted the third most livable county in the United States of America. What a great honor. However, there are thousands of people and families in Napomo, California, including myself, that would disagree with that today. For a county that spends $800,000 on a study in regards to flooding and then does not spend one dime to fix the problem and then promises for another 10 years to fix the same problem, something's terribly wrong. Meanwhile, the same damages to the families, their homes, and their health is ruined over and over and over again. One might wonder about the most livable county in the United States of America. For who? I'm sure that all of you sitting on this board and all you people out here wouldn't let your children go to bed in their rooms at night with cholera, typhoid, salmonella, E. coli, hepatitis, and black mold lures among them. I say this metaphorically, and I quote, "The most dangerous people are the ones who have nothing to lose." Some of us have lost everything. The sad fact is that this could have been prevented by the county, not just once, but 6 times. You can point the finger and the blame whoever you like. This might be a case of David versus Goliath. However, the people of Napomo, California, will protect their health, homes, and families. I'll never understand why the county won't spend a dime to fix a problem. However, they'll spend millions to chase it later. The county, in my opinion, for this case, gets an F minus. However, I will give them an A plus on one case. That special, specific case would be how efficiently the county collects the taxes from the people of Napomo, California. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Stream, followed by Joyce Albright.
Good morning. My name is Ann Rehm. It is a delight to be here with you this morning. And I represent the San Luis Obispo County Arts Council. And that is a real delight for me to have in my life. I am so thrilled this morning to share with you that we are about ready to embark on the project of providing public art for this magnificent facility. As of yesterday, the request for proposal was available, and there will be one piece for the exterior and one or more pieces for the interior lobby area. This is a really exciting time for this beautiful facility that graces this county. I would first of all like to thank those people who worked with the Arts Council in the county to make this a reality. David Edge, Deb Hosley, Susan Baker, George Rosenberger, Greg McDougall, and from the city, Betsy Kaiser, and of course to all of you. I would like to give you and the artists of our county, this county is enormously rich with artists, all of the important information that they should know. The requests for proposals are now available and can be downloaded from the Arts Council website, and that is simply www.slowartscouncil.org. Slow Arts Council being one word. It is not a large document, therefore it is easily downloaded from your computer. If a computer is not available, the Arts Council has hard copies in its office on the corner of Napomo and Mar Street in San Luis Obispo. On February 1st, in this facility, there will be an artist walkthrough, and the submittal deadline is March 13th. So by summer, we should have projects installed within this magnificent facility. So thank you to you. It has been a wonderful process between the county and the Arts Council. So thank you, thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Albright, followed by David Dugan.
Hold it. You have to push and hold for a second.
We got that working.
Okay. See if your voice is being picked up.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. Is that fine right here? Good morning, Honorable President and Board. My name is Joyce Albright, and I represent Taxpayers Watch, a group of citizens which was formed in opposition to the Los Osos Community Services District's activities. I'm sure you and half of the nation are familiar with the disastrous events which have occurred since the election of our current board. Some of these board members and their supporters have appeared before you, and I apologize if their behavior has offended you in any way. These people do not represent the majority of our community, and we are on the verge of circulating a petition to dissolve the district. As Jeffrey Young of the Regional Water Quality Control Board has so succinctly stated, the current LOCSD board has proven itself incapable of governing Los Osos. He also indicated that the Los Osos CSD board members and their attorneys designed Measure B as a poison pill. The current LOCSD board has literally destroyed everything attained by its predecessors and rendered itself unable to build a sewer in our town. We are fighting to keep these people from selling off the real estate and paying out all of our cash to their attorneys, who are the only ones profiting in this situation. We hope you will keep us in your thoughts and prayers as we move ahead to save our community. Los Osos really does want a sewer now, and we'll be seeking your assistance in that regard when the dissolution is accomplished. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dugan, followed by Glenn Goodman.
Dave Dugan, vigilante, water warrior, water committee alternate, pro-growth, Republican, and future Los Osos CSD candidate. Last time I spoke here, I said I might go over to the county clerk's office and inquire of the process for the security of the LOCSD recall absentee ballots. I did walk over there and was greeted with, not with a, how may I help you, but a terse and disrespectful, what do you want? I assumed that as a citizen, a resident, and a human being, I should be accorded some respect, especially from the deputy clerk. But obviously, after being branded by that office as the vigilante and being greeted in such a disrespectful manner, I can see my status considered second class. However, after talking with a different clerk, I was assured that their system of checks and balances was unassailable. And yet, when I went online that very day, I found dozens of websites outlining different ways that system can be breached. So much for being unassailable. Changing to a different subject. As I understand it, only a few people in Los Osos want to see the LOCSD dissolved, and even less in the county. But petition or not, I believe LAFCO can still has the power to, by resolution, to dissolve the LOCSD without a protest period and even a vote of the electorate. That's a lot of power. But I would only say this. In the next few months, you will see a new political power gaining strength in Los Osos, and a new political movement will be taking shape. The election cycle is coming up, and there is a move to amend Measure B. This move may put Tri-W back in the mix. A recall effort may be taking shape also, and the three newly elected candidates will be up for re-election. By November, a whole new board could be seated. I would recommend to everyone and anyone to save yourself some money, drop the lawsuits, and the quest for disillusionment of the LOCSD, and put all your efforts into a political solution to our problems. It will take less time. It will be cheaper. Let's hold on to our little democracy and do this right. Otherwise, we all pay, and no one but the lawyers will win. Property owners, mark my words. An election is the best and cheapest way to go. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Goodman, followed by Bob Kreiser.
Good morning. Glenn Goodman, Los Osos. I own a single-family home in the Prohibition Zone, abutted by about 10 acres of land that apparently in 2 weeks' time is going to come before your board because some developers want to create 42 parcels. And I'm sure that your planning staff is doing everything that you need to ensure that this is a proper project. But as a 20-year resident of Los Osos, it just reminds me of how this board has dealt with land use and such actions in the past, to the point where we had thousands of lots, 25 by 75, and that kind of density is kind of what has caused a large part of the pollution that we're trying to address. So I'm not sure exactly whether this is a Monarch Grove type project that's going to have its own sewer system until the main project is completed, or whether it's, you know, just a subdivision pending that. And I'm not here to really speak on this, although, you know, Harry, you've been here a long time, you've seen these for many years, and I just hope that this is an appropriate project, and I trust that you'll consider it with your staff's recommendations. More importantly, I'd like to follow up with my fellow Los Osians and try and encourage this board, despite its fear to touch our community and our project, to begin the new year as advocates for our community, because like Oceano CSD, Los Osos depends not just on our CSD, but on your board to deal with all of our issues. Some things are under our CSD's jurisdiction, and some things are under your jurisdiction. And I encourage all of you to emulate the model set by Assemblyman Blakeslee, who stood up and said, let's figure out a way, and used his political power and his position as an elected representative to advocate for our community. I'm not sure how successful he's been, but I appreciate what he's done, and I think that the more representatives like yourselves that work together, brainstorm, use your resources to negotiate amongst all agencies to come up with a forward-thinking solution that obviously our community is going to have to fund. We accept that, but we still need help to devise a real solution that all parties will accept, and that type of mediation is the type of thing that your agency can facilitate, and I just really hope that 2006 ends with bouquets from the Tribune to all of you for how you handled yourself and how you advocated and helped solve our community problem. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you. Bob, followed by Tom Martin.
Good morning, Chairman and Board. My name is Bob Kreiser. I'm from Los Osos, a community in trouble. We've proven that we can't manage our community effectively. In brief, the dire straits, we have a CSD in place that has stopped a permitted project. It has undergone more than $12 million in penalties from contractors. It has defaulted on a $135 million, 2.5% loan. $6 million of that needs to be repaid. We don't have that money. And added cost to acquire a market value loan of plus or minus $60 million, maybe 70, depending on the end project. $500,000 in the wastewater funds was squandered on paying off lawsuits that the CSD had already essentially won. They succeeded in getting fined in excess of $6 million from the Regional Water Quality Control Board, who also agrees that we can't govern ourselves. They were elected saying that they had a plan, and they still have no plan. They would have transparent government, and the settling of those lawsuits of $500,000, they didn't tell anybody they did that. It happened in closed session, and weeks went by before anybody was aware. I think there's a Brown Act violation involved, till the newspaper actually came out with the fact that they had done it. They say that they just need to get back in line for another loan. And when you default on a loan and you owe $6 million, you don't just get back in line and they just treat you the same way. The low-interest loan is not going to be available to this CSD. We intend to dissolve the CSD, and we look forward to working with the county to proceed with a wastewater project in Los Osos. There will be a lot of the community that will step up and work with the county individuals that are involved here. Our community intends to pay for all of it. There's no question about that. That's not even an issue. And we would work with the county in any way that we can to see that this thing goes back into production once it's dissolved. Thank you.
Thank you. Tom?
Tom Martin from San Luis Garbage. I just want to remind everybody that the new telephone book is out, and if you go to page 564, there's a cardboard fold-out. I want you to pull it out. If you have any questions about any recycling program or composting program, it's there in your phone book. All those questions can be answered. Second thing is that the customers of Mission Country Disposal, Morro Bay Garbage, San Luis Garbage, and South County Sanitary have come into the 21st century. You now can pay your garbage bill online by going to wasteconnections.com. You just have to have your bill in front of you, and it's actually very easy. I've done it, and if I can do it, anybody can. So wasteconnections.com with your bill. Thank you.
Tom,
thank you.
Before you go, do we have a charge for advertising? The other thing, it's been on the news most recently, starting February, and I haven't had a chance to talk with Bill Worrell or anybody, but are we gearing up for this onslaught of everybody in their from size AAA batteries on up that have to dispose of them separately?
as of February 8th, you can no longer throw toy batteries in the garbage. They become a universal waste that has to be handled separately. The state has indicated that they will not be doing any major inspections. I believe it's a move to try and get rebates on all those things. But it not only affects batteries, it's everything with an electrical cord on it. Mm-hmm. Alarm clocks, tiny little thing. Anything that plugs in is now a universal waste and has to be dealt with separately. You cannot bury it in the landfill. So it's going to become a huge issue. Currently, Coal Canyon has plans to send it to Golden State Recycling in Bakersfield, and they have indicated they will be able to deal with it. Now, whether that comes to fruition on February 8th, we'll find out. But
okay.
It's going to be a tough play.
Thank you.
Thank you. I couldn't see any Rotary, Pinonim, or Kiwanis to call his club and have them charge you for advertising this morning. But we'll look into it.
It's just like a Rotary meeting. Just find me.
Thank you. That's the last request to speak under public comment period. We did hear this morning from two gentlemen about flooding issues, and it only gets more sensitive and more emotional and frustrating from there on. A lot of people did get hurt. And I, for one, I'm sure my colleagues feel the same way as we did visit the sites that were flooded. We're not just going to hear about it, but we're willing to do something about it. I spent quite a bit of time with our Public Works and County Administration Office to come back hopefully in March, any earlier we can, to share with the public as the causes of the flood, where it's getting flooded, and what can we do, even if it's not our responsibility, and just go beyond that for a change. And it's been quite emotional for us to deal with it as well. But needless to say, a lot of, such as Mr. Burkow's corner, they have four jurisdictions, and all four of us are pointing fingers to each other. Maybe it's time we all sit down and do something good for the good of the community rather than whose pocket it comes out of first or last, and hopefully we'll put an end to that. With that, Ms. Bianchi.
Yes. Over the past year or so, it's been going on for so long now, I've forgotten how long. I get requests from various citizens in Los Osos asking to intervene. Well, I don't intervene, not from fear, but I legally cannot, unless an official request comes from the Los Osos Community Services District with a resolution, on letterhead, with a resolution attached indicating that it had gone before the board, there had been a discussion. The majority of the board had voted to request that, somehow I become involved. And unless and until that happens, I cannot help them. They are not a subdivision or a subset of the county. They are a subdivision or subset, I'm not sure the exact word, of the state of California. So Assemblyman Blakesley was able to assist in that manner. Until the law is changed, I cannot. It's not whether I want to or whether I don't want to. I cannot. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, Mr. Greek, would you come forward and introduce the next item, please?
Perhaps I'll just do it from here this morning. Richard Greek, Personnel Director. It's a pleasure to continue assisting your board with recognizing county employees. This morning I get to real quickly just move the whole presentation over to your board. We have three general services employees that we're going to be recognizing for 30 years of service. Before turning it over to your board, I want to remind the employees that as their names are announced, they should go over to the right podium. And General Services Director Dwayne Leib may replace me here at this podium so that he may make a few comments after your comments, Supervisor Asajian, and that the conclusion, the employee, if they wish, may make a few comments. So with that, and you're going to be presenting the watches this morning also.
Thank you, Mr. Greek. Our first recipient is Jack Craigie. I heard he's not available, but Mr. Dwayne will still perform his duties after I ask Mr. Lenthal to read about Mr. Craigie.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to read this about Jack Craigie. Unfortunately, he couldn't be here, so Dwayne will answer any questions you have about it.
I'll represent Jack this morning. Thank you.
Jack is a native of San Luis Obispo and became employed with the county on January 29, 1975, as a library page. He was hired as a custodian in 1977 and was promoted to lead worker in 1982. During his 30-plus years with the county, he has never reported to work late, and he would like to remind everyone he's never had his paycheck late either. As a child, Jack's mother used to walk him and his brother downtown for a treat. They would go into the courthouse and ride the elevator. After all, at that time, not many elevators were in downtown San Luis Obispo. When Jack started, the old courthouse was still used for court proceedings. Almost all of the present county facilities have been added during his tenure, and the others remodeled into other uses. During this time, he has also met and worked with a vast amount of county employees and who has enjoyed being associated with a great cast of diverse characters. He would like to acknowledge his more than 25 years of knowing and working with former custodial supervisor John Ford and the late lead workers Jim Johnson and Jim Ramey. As a hobby, Jack collects and exhibits photographs of the San Luis Obispo City Fire Department. He recently provided the names and employment dates of the retired members of the fire department that were placed on a plaque in front of Station 1 in honor of their service. Jack looks forward to being a part of the county workforce for many more years to come and seeing the changes that they will bring. Even though Jack is not here today, I want to congratulate him on his 30 years of service and turn it over to General Services Director Dwayne Leib.
Thank you very much, Supervisor Lenthal. Dwayne Leib, General Services Director. Jack works nights. This is a little bit of an early morning hour for him. But you may all recognize him. He lives in the downtown area. And while we're all busy working, you can see this tall, white-haired, very distinguished gentleman walking a beautiful Australian Shepherd around the streets surrounding the courthouse. Two things in what you read, Supervisor Lenthal, I think are indicative of his character. Number one, in 30 years, he's never been late for work. And number two, Jack wanted to recognize some retired and deceased employees that he used to work for. Very dedicated employee. I've relied very heavily on him in the last 25 years of my association with him to bring off what I consider a superior product. And I know Jack will be watching this later, so if I could look into the camera and say, Jack, thank you for 30 terrific years, and thank you.
Thank you. And we have quite a few folks from General Services today. Would you all stand up, please? I'd like to thank you all for the great job you do.
Thank you.
Next recipient is Tom Massey, and I will ask Supervisor Ovid to read that.
Most of those, they're out there from Parks, and I think they're here to see if Tom's still with us. You know.
Still here.
Still here. Tom's got an unusual story, and what's funny about this, it says Parks and Beaches, and I don't know if it's been called that for years, but it was at one time, and it began with Morbay Golf Course in 1967. And interestingly, he lived next to the golf course. He lived on in the caretaker's facilities there at the beach. And as things would be, as the story continues to unfold, your dad was hired by the county as a groundskeeper at the Morbay course, which, of course, is leased by the county from the state. But also his oldest brother, Leon, was also employed on the golf course. And I guess destiny has its thing, but they let you come to work for us and on a part-time basis. And then I guess they just couldn't leave it alone, but your mom, they talk about, was at home cooking lunch for you.
That's right.
Which I happen to remember working for my dad and what that meant. At least you had some respite when you got home. Ironically, Tom started working for us for about $2.52 an hour, and he worked that till age 20. And I'm glad to see that you decided to fulfill your military obligation and went into the United States Navy like some of us did. Mm-hmm. And returned to the county, and in 1975, again, was hired back as full-time greenskeeper. And Tom's work and dedication has been recognized. He was given a position of lead greenskeeper at Morro Bay, and he served as a crew leader. But I think more of his distinguished capabilities, even though he's now the position of supervisor at Morro Bay, was his ability not only as a strong leader,
and a communicator, but in 1990 he helped organize and direct the Audubon Sanctuary Program, which eventually led for the golf course being recognized by the Audubon Cooperative, which is no small task in itself, and I'm sure Dwayne would probably say something. Rudy's back here too, so he's probably. But anyway, it was the 13th golf course nationwide and the second in California that gained this title. And it also has been repeatedly recognized as a People's Choice Best Golf Course on the Central Coast. So he's brought both regional and national recognition to the Morro Bay Golf Course. He's an exceptional employee and is well respected, as you see, by many people throughout the golf industry and I think your fellow employees. And we're most fortunate to have Tommy, and we want to thank him for his 30 years of working in outstanding service. Tom. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, if I may have a few words. Dwayne Lipp, General Services Director. I'm sure you're all aware of the success of Morro Bay Golf Course. It's been renowned and written about many times, won many awards. It's called the Poor Man's Pebble Beach. The Audubon's status was very significant for us. The success of Morro Bay Golf Course, I want you to realize that a lot of it's attributed to this man right here, Tommy Massey, because he's basically grown up on this golf course. The 25 years that I've been associated with him, by the way, that's a long time. This morning we have 90 years of experience with General Services employees. I look back with pride at our relationship, and I look where we were and where we are today, and Tom Massey, his dedication, he's the personification of a dedicated county employee. And not only do I thank him for the success of Morro Bay Golf Course, I thank him for an incredible 30 years of service. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Tommy Massey, golf course supervisor, Morro Bay Golf Course. 30 years. It seems like it was just yesterday. I remember I had hair 30 years ago. Actually, I don't remember having hair, but I've been blessed with a great staff throughout my 30 years there, and working with people like Pete Jenny, George Rosenberger, and Dwayne Leib, and also my immediate supervisor, Ray Festa, who's an extremely good friend of mine. I've been blessed. But most of all, I want to thank my wife, Lori, out there, who has always supported my decisions in this career.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tom, I was told to take golf to maintain my hair and lose some weight, and I don't think I'm going to do that.
But you should take it up.
All I do.
Can we have Gloria stand up, please, so we can recognize you?
And I do want to say I do see Harry out on the golf course throughout the county throughout the year.
He's looking healthy, too.
Thank you.
I didn't lose hair, though.
Thank you. Our last but not least recipient is Don Sparks. Would you please come forward? And among these three gentlemen, we have 90 years of experience, maturity. Did Don not make it, Mr. Dipe?
I don't think Don is here this morning. We expected him. I'm sorry, I don't see him.
Well, that's okay. Why don't I go ahead
and sure.
Say a few words about Don. Like so many others, Don came to San Luis Obispo and attended Cal Poly in the early 70s, as I did. Also, like so many others, he chose to stay here after graduation. Don first began his career with the old Department of Parks and Beaches as a groundsman at the Tascadero Lake Park in September of 1975. No doubt attracted by the $4 per hour wages, the next year he was promoted to Park Ranger 1 and then Ranger 2 in the following year. Since that time, Don has spent most of his career working in the South County. Don has always been one of those dedicated employees who quietly goes about the work of serving the community. However, those efforts have not gone unnoticed. Not only do his co-workers respect his work ethics, but the community has also written to park staff to commend his fine work, particularly at Nipomo Community Park, a park that has seen a transition from dusty weed patch to the green gem it is today. Don is commended for his tireless work at this park. He has been an important part of the county park system since 1975 and remains so today.
We thank him for his many years of hard work and dedication to duty and look forward to many more years of service to the county. I want to personally congratulate Don and for the great job he's done at the community park in the community of Nipomo. With that, Mr. Live, would you like to say a few words, and I'll give his clock to you.
Yes,
if you'll be
thank
kind.
You very much. Dwayne Live, General Services Director. On behalf of Don Sparks, I'm very happy to acknowledge his 30 years of service to the county. As you mentioned, Supervisor Sajjan, Nipomo Park is one of our jewels, and I would like to tell you that in 1980, when I first laid eyes on Nipomo Park, I was astounded. I said, this is not a park. This is a weed patch. And over the last 25 years, you've seen the transition to the jewel it is today. And Don is a very large part in that transition. Don, like so many parks employees that we have, works by himself and goes all over the county, over 3,000 square miles of county, and takes care of parks from north to south. You don't normally see him in the government center, so it's not atypical that he's not here this morning. He's out there somewhere working very hard, trying to keep our parks up to the high quality that we've learned to enjoy. So on behalf of the county, and again, I'll look into the camera. I'm sure Don will be watching this later. Don, thank you for 30 terrific years, and thank you, Cottrell.
Thank you. You can have it. Okay, thank you all. With that, Madam Clerk, would you please introduce the next item on our agenda?
Consent calendar.
It'd be your consent calendar for public comment.
Okay. I have no request to speak under consent agenda items. And seeing no one coming forward, bringing to the board members, Supervisor Bianchi?
None, thank you.
Supervisor Lenthal?
Yes, I'd like to comment on B20.
Supervisor Patterson?
I would like to comment on item B8.
Supervisor Ovid?
No comment.
Okay, now I'd like to pull B16 for clarification purposes. With that, let me go by numerical order. B8, Supervisor Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Item B8 is a recommendation by auditor to take a look at the Mid-State Solid Waste and Recycling contract and given a rate extension. And I support the auditor's recommendation. And I just want to say that as a resident of North County, Mr. Goodrow, who is the owner of Mid-State Solid Waste and Recycling, has pioneered curbside recycling in the rural parts of the county. He was the first waste hauler to make that service available to the rural community, and I just want to let them know that I very much appreciate that opportunity for the rural residents to recycle and to also have in the urbanized areas of the unincorporated North County where Mid-State Solid Waste and Recycling services, they also have a curbside pickup of green waste, and Mid-State has constructed a state-of-the-art material separation facility in Templeton, as well as a composting facility out in Creston, and so they're going that extra mile to divert materials out of the landfill, again targeting primarily the residential customers, and I want to thank them for their efforts, and again, I support staff's recommendation.
Supervisor Ovid?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just asked me a question about the three-year, and it says conceptual approval in the agenda, and on this one it says that the auditor would move forward with a three-year. I just want to take the number of years off because we also received information from our Mary Whittlesey, basically that there could be different extensions based on different criteria, and I think if we're going to refer it back, that all that criteria needs to come forward, and then the number of years be referred at that point, so that the motion would basically read for the 21% and then refer the extension back to a future calendar date.
Would that require a separate motion?
I think it's just an amendment with inside this. I don't think it, because it's actually a recommendation for other action is all it is. I see Mr. Baring shaking his head, so it must have some approval.
Sir Baring, would you like to comment?
No, I don't need to comment, but I think the way Harry has proposed it is appropriate.
Okay. I look at some of these operations with the number of trucks and equipment they have, and being in the business that I'm in, anytime we purchase large equipments and you go to the bank to borrow money, they always want to know what kind of contracts you have out there that will be a good return on your investment, and that's always come into consideration. And having that in mind, I don't mind to see more than 3 years go towards a contract. With that, next item is B16. Public comment will come forward. For clarification, I had a couple of comments asked, or a couple of questions asked of me that concerns about the speed limit, but with this item B16, we're not doing that. Would you clarify as why it is in front of us so we have a better understanding for those who have had concerns with this?
Certainly. Dave Flynn with Public Works Department. The item on your agenda is the acceptance of a roadway system that was developed as part of Track 1749 and 2172. I think of concern in that area is the alignment of Sheridan Road, which is a road that fronts this track, has a very pronounced vertical curve to it. And in on this road, as well as others in that area, there's always concern about site distance and adequate improvement along the road. This track has done frontage improvements along its track that comes up or touches near the pronounced vertical curve. And in so doing, has allowed us to stripe the road so that there are two distinct travel ways that go over that vertical curve. There is no obstacle or hazard on either side of the curve to be addressed. And there is a posting of 25 miles an hour over this curve. So the track itself has done everything that it was conditioned to do. But I believe there are concerns in the neighborhood about the vertical curve. It is not something that the Public Works Department would really proceed with any correction due to the low volume of traffic on the road. If it was on a more sensitive road, such as Willow Road, which we have done in the past, we certainly would make vertical corrections. But it was not a condition of this track, nor is it something the department would proceed with.
Thank you. Supervisor Lentol.
Thank you, Chairman. I know I'm going to get myself in trouble for this, but there was a employee, Karen Colombo, B20, on the resolution that retired from the Sheriff's Department December 17th after 26 years of service. She likes to fly under the radar and go out quietly, so the fact that I'm going to publicly recognize her, I'm going to hear from this probably for a long time. I've had the pleasure of knowing her for 35 years, and I just wanted to say that this is an outstanding employee that did a lot of work, especially financial things, problems, worked late at the night many times to do budget issues for the Sheriff's Department, and I just want to commend her for her 26 years of service.
You're right. She'll get you.
Thank you.
With that, Mr. Chairman, I would move for approval of the consent calendar with the amendment to B8.
Second.
We have a motion by Supervisor Ovitz, seconded by Supervisor Bianchi. A roll call, please.
Mr. Ovitz.
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi.
Yes.
Mr. Lenthal.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye. We want to take a break, but question to Madam Clerk. When we did the presentation to the employees, did that require a motion? Did we?
We usually do, but I defer it to council if we're actually required to have a motion, since it's a presentation.
Just to clarify the record, the board should probably just vote to approve the presentations. So if you just do that now.
So move.
Second.
Aye.
Roll call.
You want a roll call?
Please.
Mr. Ovitz?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye. Thank you. With that, we'll take a 15-minute break and come back here at 10:30.
So, you do this just for a moment.
The following is a list of meeting dates, locations, and contact information for the County of San Luis Obispo Community Advisory Councils. The Avila Valley Advisory Council meets the second Monday of every month at 7 p.m. at the PG&E Community Center, 6588 Ontario Road in Avila Beach. More information can be found on their website at www.avilavalley.org. The Cayuga Citizens Advisory Council. The Avila Valley Advisory Council meets the second Monday of every month at 7 p.m. at the PG&E Community Center, 6588 Ontario Road in Avila Beach. More information can be found on their website at www.avilavalley.org. The Cayuga Citizens Advisory Council meets the first Wednesday of every month at 7 p.m. at the Cayugas Vets Hall, 10 Cayugas Drive in Cayugas. More information can be found on their website at www.cayugas.org. Click on the Cayuga Citizens Advisory Council icon. The Los Osos Community Advisory Council meets the fourth Thursday of every month at 7 p.m. at the South Bay Community Center, 2180 Palisades Avenue in Los Osos. More information can be found at www.lososbaywoodpark.org. Click on the local government icon. The Napomo Community Advisory Council meets the fourth Monday of every month at 6:30 p.m. at the Napomo Community Services District Office, 148 South Wilson Avenue in Napomo. More information can be found on their website at napomocac.org. The North Coast Advisory Council meets the third Wednesday of each month at 7 p.m. at the Mid-State Bank and Trust Community Room, 870 Main Street, Cambria. The Oceano Halcyon Advisory Council meets the third Monday of every month at 6:30 p.m. at the Oceano Community Services District Boardroom, 1655 Front Street in Oceano. The San Miguel Advisory Council meets the fourth Wednesday of every month at 7:30 p.m. at the San Miguel Community Center, L and 12th Streets in San Miguel. The Santa Margarita Area Advisory Council meets the second Wednesday of every month at 7 p.m., except July and December, at the Santa Margarita School Library, 22070 H Street in Santa Margarita. More information can be found on their website at www.smaaconline.org. The Shandon Advisory Council meets the first Wednesday of every month at 7 p.m. at the Senior House at Shandon Park, 101 West Center Street in Shandon. The Templeton Area Advisory Group meets the third Thursday of every month at 7 p.m. at the Templeton Community Services District, 420 Crocker in Templeton. More information can be found on their website at taag.home.att.net. The Economic Advisory Committee meets the third Thursday of every month at 3 p.m. at the PG&E Community Center, 6588 Ontario Road in Avila Beach. The Cambria Forest Management Committee meets the fourth Wednesday of every month at 7 p.m. at the fire station on Burton in Cambria. The following is information about the San Luis Obispo County Planning and Building Department's website. This is found at www.slowplanning.org. On the department website, you can find information about the status of your building permit and zoning information about your property. On the website, you can find information about the department's office location and hours, a list of publications available, downloadable application forms, and agendas and staff reports for Planning Commission, Subdivision Review Board, and Planning Department hearings. Planning and zoning maps are available from the General Information page. Under Links, click on Maps, Planning and Zoning. On the Long Range Planning page, you can find the county's housing element, as well as links to Lupin and Ceres, where you can find other county elements and ordinances. On the Environmental Review page, information is available on the California Environmental Quality Act, as well as individual project environmental determination notices.
Call the meeting back to order, and at this time, Madam Clerk, would you please introduce the first item on our public hearing agenda items?
The first item is C1, a hearing to consider an appeal of the South County Road Improvement Fee by Don West for a building permit to convert a guest house to a secondary residence on Highland Hill Road, Napomo, 4th District. Recommend denial of the appeal.
Thank you. Mr. Marshall?
Thank you, Supervisor Shajian, members of the board, Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. The applicants have applied for a construction permit to convert an existing structure from a guest house to a secondary residence. The permit involves the addition of a kitchen as well as some other modifications to the existing structure. It's subject to the road improvement fee, and the applicant's agent, I believe he's their architect, has filed an appeal on their behalf. The issues of appeal are summarized in the staff report along with our responses. Primarily has to do with the discussion of the conversion of the existing structure and what is it now versus what are they proposing to do. Our conclusion is that the application is subject to the fee, and we recommend your board deny the appeal. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Marshall. From my readings, the difference in square footage is about 20 square feet. Is that correct in your estimate?
I actually don't even know the difference in square footage because that wasn't a factor in our consideration.
Yeah.
Residential fees are based on the number of dwelling units and not on square footage.
Okay. The difference between a guest house and a secondary dwelling is the kitchen in this case?
Yes. That's the basic element that's different between the two. The way that I describe to people what a guest house is, my sort of nickname I've come up with is, it's a detached bedroom. And so it could just as easily be attached, and we would never think of it as a greater number of dwelling units. But when you add a kitchen, it becomes a full dwelling unit. It could be rented separately, and that's the distinction we draw in charging the fees.
Okay, if they maintained it as a guest room and they wanted to remodel, this would not have come to our attention?
If the construction permit for this structure were designated to remain a guest house, then it would not be subject to the fee because it is already a guest house. and that's the one that's the detached bedroom, converting it to a full residence, in this case a secondary dwelling unit, is what crosses the threshold and makes it subject to the fee.
So the difference is that it's becoming a full-time occupied rather than just as used for guests as
right.
as they choose to.
The applicants indicate that they intend to live in it during the process of remodeling the primary residence, and then after that it will just be for occasional guests. But once it's been constructed to be a complete residence, any time over its existence, it can be separately rented to another family and thus be functioning as two dwelling units on the property. But there isn't any permitting process after this one in, to which to attach the fees.
Any questions or comments by supervisors? Seeing none, this is an appeal. So we'll go to the applicant first, if you want to come forward. We will introduce yourself to us.
My name is Don West. I'm architect for Dr. Pohl and his wife on this residence. And I have prepared a little PowerPoint presentation for you I'd like to go through, if I could get that.
Do you need help with that?
If I can get it up on the screen, I can think I can go from there.
Okay.
There we go. Thank you. This first slide is, first is a location plan showing you where in the county it is. This is the, I have to go back. This is more sensitive than I thought it was. I'm sorry. This location plan, it's off of in the South Highway 101 off of North Thompson Boulevard, back in behind a gated community, and it's a 20-acre parcel back in here. This is the parcel, the house, existing house, and the existing guest house are located on this part of the property. Oh, okay. Thank you. This is a what's existing right now is a two-story structure. The lower floor consisting of a shop, storage area, an office, and a carport. The upper floor is a guest room, bathroom, and a deck. The modification to it is illustrated here, where the lower floor is in the same footprint. We maintain the shop and the storage. We're converting the garage and the carport, excuse me.
Thanks.
I'm sorry. Whoops.
Point.
We're converting the what was the office and a carport into a garage, which would serve the main house when that's remodeled. We go to the upper floor, and it can consist of a sleeping area, the existing bathroom. Sorry. A kitchen area and a living room, where we're enclosed above the garage. The deck is the expansion of this area, and we have a little bay window off of that room. The some spatial comparison of this, the footprint of the existing facility is 820 square feet, and the improved facility is the same. The support space is the same, 270 square feet. Decks and balconies, we've reduced the balcony area from 350 to 55 square feet. We've converted the carport to a garage. My goodness. But the occupied space is 820 square feet originally and 840 square feet after the improvement, the difference being that little bay window that sticks out of the guest room. So if we go to, this is a quick sketch showing you the appearance of the building when completed. The portion on the right with the upturned roof is the expansion. Now, I will just wind up our presentation here by going to a summary. State that the main house and the guest house were permitted and constructed in the 1970s. The existing use does not change. The existing footprint does not change. And the existing occupied area essentially does not change. So therefore, we think by this definition, this could not be considered new development, on which the basis of the road fees is based, I believe. So that pretty much concludes our presentation. We're available for questions.
Any supervisor would like to ask questions? Supervisor Patterson?
Yes, Mr. West. How long do you estimate the remodel of the main house to take?
Approximately 6 months.
Thank you. I don't have any requests to speak from the public. With that, there are no questions for the applicant to rebut. Bring it back to the Board of Supervisors for further discussion. Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A quick question for Mr. Marshall. In the presentation that we just heard, in the summary, it says the project does not constitute new development. It really, what it is, it's a change from a guest house to a secondary unit, which is self-contained. And as you pointed out, though the current resident does not intend to use it other than a guest house, potentially in the future it could be used as a second resident. Does the ordinance regarding the road improvement fee only apply to new development, or it applies here as well?
The ordinance applies to new development and includes some language which defines how that is determined, and our conclusion is that this constitutes new development as used by this ordinance.
When you change uses?
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Bianchi?
Yes, and we don't always just look at the current use, but also what could be the potential use if someone else purchased the property.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
I'm looking at it as maybe going from a part-time use to a full-time use, and not necessarily to waive the entire fee, but any credit could be given for the existing. I don't know if there are any ideas or thoughts given to that. No? Okay. Entertain a motion and see where we go with it.
I move staff's recommendation.
I'll second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
I'm going to say no for the reason that there's an existing building, and the entire fees in my thoughts is not as applicable as would be maybe the additional square footage and the increased usage that will entertain additional fees, but not complete as if it was a whole new structure. But three votes will go towards staff's recommendation. Ayes have it. All right. Would you, Madam Clerk, then introduce the next item?
Item C2 is a hearing to amend the Urban County of San Luis Obispo Program Year 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004, and 2005 action plans in order to reallocate community development block grant funds in the amount of $412,113 for the benefit of a new activity called the Monotone Storm Drain Project, 3rd District. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Mr. Navarro.
Thank you. Chairman Ashajian, members of the board, ladies and gentlemen, Tony Navarro, Department of Planning and Building.
I'm actually here today to request a continuation of item C2 to allow the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development to comment on the proposed project by the City of Dover Beach. We anticipated a response from HUD by this time, but for some reason they're taking a little bit more time, and we're trying to help out the city and schedule this item so they can move on with their proposed project. So hopefully by February 28th, if we can get this item scheduled to that date, we'll have a response from HUD.
Questions from or comments from supervisors?
We'll be able to accommodate that date. We have room on the calendar.
Yes, he's already approved it through admin. So we'll just need a, we can do just a voice vote.
Okay. Let me see if anybody from the public wishes to comment on this, even though I don't have any requests to speak. Seeing none, bring back for a motion.
Move to accept the continuation to February 28th.
Second.
This requires a roll call.
Actually, I think you can do a voice vote.
Since we're continuing it. Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Yes.
Aye. Any opposed? Ayes have it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next item, Madam Clerk.
Next item is C3, a hearing to consider an appeal by David Cronine of the Subdivision Review Board's disapproval of a request for a tentative parcel map using the transfer of development credit programs to subdivide an existing 40-acre parcel into two parcels of 20 acres each. The proposed project is within the agricultural land use category and is located at 4242 Las Tapas Willow Creek Road, approximately 3.5 miles west of the community of Templeton, 1st District. Recommend denial of the appeal.
Thank you. Staff?
Good morning. I am Nick Forrester with the County Planning Department. As the clerk has stated, this is an appeal by Donald Carnine of the Subdivision Review Board's denial of a two-lot parcel map using the Transfer of Development Credit Program. This is a site exhibit map showing the general vicinity of the site by Vineyard Drive and Oakdale Road, east of Templeton. Here we have a land use category map showing that the property is presently in the agricultural zone district. Here's an aerial photograph of the site showing its current development with two single family residences and various accessory structures. This is a site plan of the proposed division. Here we have an exhibit prepared by the planning department showing some of the surrounding parcel sizes. The point of this exhibit is to demonstrate that we view the area as a transition area with larger parcels to the north, smaller parcels to the south. The primary issues in the case are that the project is inconsistent with the Transfer of Development Credit Ordinance. The intent of the Transfer of Development Credit Ordinance is to prevent the creation of any new parcels with development in the flood hazard zone. This project does propose to create a parcel with an access driveway and bridge that are located in the flood hazard zone, which we view as inconsistent with the Transfer of Development Credit Ordinance. We also believe that the project is inconsistent with Ag and Open Space Policy 4, because it would create parcels that are not large enough to support agriculture. The Planning Department also believes that the project is inconsistent with General Goal 8 of the framework for planning, because it does not maintain a distinction between urban and rural development. The project is also inconsistent with General Goal 10 of the framework for planning, because it does not protect agriculturally zoned lands for agricultural purposes. The Planning Department's recommendation to the Board is to affirm the decision of the Subdivision Review Board and deny the parcel map based on the findings listed in Exhibit A. We're available for any questions that you may have.
Okay, questions or comments by supervisors?
Yes.
Supervisor.
I want you to go back, if you can, on a map of the overhead and show me where this flood zone is. It is not on the map.
Oops.
The only area that would be susceptible to any kind of flooding is next to Niter Road, and it's actually a drainage course that goes down through there. and there is existing driveways across that currently.
I do not dispute that, Supervisor Ovid. The land use category map does show a map flood hazard zone, and driveways and access bridges do meet the definition of development in the zoning ordinance. So we perceive the proposed map as being inconsistent with the transfer of development credit program.
And yet the whole rest of the property is an elevation much higher than that, and that's actually a drainage course going down.
That is correct.
Any further questions, Supervisor Ovid?
No, okay. I just disagree with that statement, but that's my situation.
Supervisor Bianchi?
Well, this is a comment, which usually should come afterwards, but it's going to come right now. I appreciated that clear and concise presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
I believe in 300 words or less.
Okay. With that, we'll go to the applicant, Ms. Osgood. Are you going to represent the applicant?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the board. My name is Toby Osgood, and I am employed by EMK and Associates in Paso Robles, and I'm here today to represent my clients, Don and Shirley Carnine, the landowners, and their daughter, Julie Vieira, and her husband, Tom Vieira. I have a little handout here that it is associated to a comment a little later in my presentation. Firstly, I would like to take you on a quick tour of the site. I have just a few photos of the property to present. Nick?
We're working on it.
We're attempting to load the presentation as you speak.
I hope I have a presentation with some photos.
Oh, we'll credit time for you while we're dealing with technical issues here.
First, let's get out the map and see where we are going. I see that this irregularly shaped parcel in blue has two road frontages, one along Niterer Road, that's the right-hand side of the blue property, and another road frontage on Willow Creek Road that are not connected. You can see at the corner there are some small parcels in between those road frontages. Next. Here we are at the intersection of Niterer Road and Willow Creek Road. That's Niterer that goes off to the right. Let's go see Julie and Tom's house first. Next. We have to go north along Niterer Road past that white house, which is on one of those little parcels on the corner. Next. Here we are at the Vieira driveway. You can see some Halloween decor in the front there that Julie and the kids did. Very nice. Next. Now we are looking up from Niterer Road. We're standing basically at Niterer Road looking up at the Vieira house. And that address is 2815 Niterer Road. The little piece of flood hazard would be that little bit of green in the lower left of the corner of the property. And the driveway that crosses over that area is the driveway to the most left side of that picture. Next. Now let's go back down Niterer Road and go up Willow Creek Road, a different road, to Mom and Dad's house, the Carnines. Next. Here we are at their driveway. We're about to turn right. They have a small agricultural barn at the bottom part of the property, and you can see their house sort of in the center of the picture, left center. You see their walnut trees. Next. Up the driveway, and here we are at the Carnines' new house. They built that just recently in 1999, and it replaced a small house at the bottom of the driveway near that barn. Next. This is a view of the hillside that separates the Vieira house and the Carnine house, and the new property line would basically go over the top of the edge of that hill. And that's it. Thank you. As everyone is fully aware of, staff is recommending denial of this project. It is my opinion that the denial is based more on the current and ongoing discussion of the use of TDCs in ag. I am aware that your board has reconsidered the use of TDCs in ags and are suggesting or preparing, I'm not sure how to state this, that you change the TDC ordinance to eliminate the receiver sites in ag. However, in April of 2005, when the Carnines made this application, it was allowable, and this project does meet the criteria in the land use ordinance. Going to the staff report, I would like to discuss the findings and the staff responses beginning on C3-3. I realize that staff has to make findings for projects, but I think that these findings should be based on reality. As for quoting individual bits and pieces of the land use element out of context as responses, this is a poor way to deal with the site specifics of this particular project. Additionally, I am a farmer, and my husband and I grow dry farm walnuts and dry farm Zinfandel in Adelaide, and I personally take exception to staff telling me what to do, where to do, how to do it, when they've never done it at all. Finding B states, and I quote, the project would only support rural residences and not agricultural uses. Quite the contrary, the Vieiras plan to expand their specialty and 4-H stock program and utilize the land with increased agriculture. Also, in many instances, a 20-acre parcel can be just the right size for a small ag operation. My own parcel has 9 acres of dry farm Zinfandel on it, and we make money, we spend money, and we lose money like it's a gilded rhinoceros. Finding C states, quote, this subdivision would erode the rural area between Paso Robles, the large rural parcels to the north and west of the project site. I do not understand how this project would erode the rural nature of the property, and the statement in the land use ordinance says that it would not. It has something to do with the defining mark between urban and rural uses. Is there a yellow line that we draw between urban and rural uses? I think a 20-acre parcel is an ideal transitional parcel. Finding D says it would not protect the agriculturally zoned land for the purposes of production of food and fiber. Once again, I disagree with this. The opposite of protect is destroy, and there's nothing about this project that would destroy the land. Finding E is definitely out there for me. This is what the handout is about. The key words are area proposed for development. Right now, there isn't any area proposed for development. When I first reviewed this proposal with the Carnines and Vieiras, we carefully reviewed the rules in the land use ordinance and whether the property qualifies according to these rules. We did this for each criterion individually. This property clearly met the requirements, so we proceeded. It was only later that I received a staff report and I find out that staff does not think we meet the requirements. The particular requirement of the land use ordinance states, the footprint of the area proposed for development, is outside of various areas, including the flood hazard area. Staff stated to SRB that the project does not meet this criterion in the land use ordinance because the existing Vieira driveway crosses a narrow strip of flood hazard area that is within the banks of a seasonal creek that does not have a flooding problem. That the driveway crosses the flood hazard area is not being questioned. That the driveway is considered proposed development is being questioned. Staff stated to SRB that they consider all existing development to be proposed development. I have to say, the last check I made of Webster's Dictionary, which was just the other day, the definition of propose means to plan or to intend. It does not say it's existing. The words proposed development do not mean an existing driveway that has been there since before the Carnines bought the property. If the rule is to include all existing and proposed development, it should state those words, all existing and proposed development. Considerable confusion on my part regarding this. Additionally, if staff thought the project did not meet the criteria of the land use ordinance, they should have communicated that point to me in either of the two letters that they sent to me regarding the project asking for additional information, or they could have given me a phone call about that. Finding F, this one might seem pretty clever to address the proposed parcels are smaller than the parcels to the north, which is generally true, though if you hike up Niter Road for a quarter of a mile, you hit APN 024 that has 2 acres, consists of 2 acres. However, there are 4 directions on the compass rows, north, south, east, and west. We forgot about the other 3 directions because the parcels in those directions are smaller, much smaller, extremely smaller, and about the same size as our proposed 20-acre parcels. The facts of the project are, the project is clearly a good use of a TDC credit, one where a credit is purchased from the Bonheim Ranch, which is much further out and brought in much closer to an area of already smaller parcels. Another fact is that the neighbors do not have any problem with this project. They even signed a petition saying that they were supportive of what the Carnines and Vieiras have done, and not one letter or phone call of opposition has occurred from the neighborhood.
Ms. Osgood, would you please summarize? Your time is up.
I want to take one more moment before I conclude, which I promise will be right away, to talk about the secondary residences. I had recommended to my clients that in order to make this process quicker and easier, they should give up any possibility of future secondary residences. I made a mistake in that advice. The issue of foregoing secondary residences has not been an issue worthy of consideration or discussion with staff, and has definitely not made the process any easier. Therefore, I am advising my clients to withdraw that reference from their project description at this time. In conclusion, I hereby respectfully request that this project be evaluated on its particular circumstances and that my clients be allowed to proceed with their project. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. I don't have any requests to speak from the public at large. Would anybody care to speak at this time? Please come forward. Would I'm sorry. Okay, before I get to the public, always let me know as an appellant that you have other members. That way we can adjust the time accordingly. Please.
This is my wife, Shirley.
Hi.
And Don, and we've lived out there on that piece of property for about 30 years now. All I can say is there hasn't been anything changed. These people needed a place to stay. And I got my heart up and put a home down on their end of the property. I don't see them, hear them, or nothing. And it hasn't changed anything. They've lived there for, what, 20 years? So there's nothing changing. Nothing's changed. There's going to be evidently a fence put down there and say, that's yours, 20, and this is mine. I'm going to keep mine the way it is.
Well, first of all, when we bought this home 30 years ago, we could have had a much nicer home.
Would
anywhere.
You please give us your name for the record, even though we know who you are?
I'm sorry, I can't hear
give
you.
Give us your name for the record.
I'm sorry, my name is Shirley. I'm Julie's mother, and I live at 4242 Los Tablos, Willow Creek. We bought the home. It only had a fireplace in the living room for heat because we wanted the 40 acres, and that's the only way we could afford it. At that time, we could have divided the home, the land, into 10-acre parcels, 4 10-acre parcels. They told us this when we bought it. Unfortunately, we thought that law would stand forever, and it didn't stand forever. In the meantime, my daughter built a home on the other side of our property. We have 7 children, and our home has increased in value so much that if we die, there is no way that she is going to be able to hold on to her home and her end of the 20 acres. She has 2 sons. We have 16 grandchildren. And the only 2 that are interested in agriculture belong to this couple. The others have all grown up in the city. These 2 boys belong to FFA. They raise pigs. I think they have 8 at the present time. They raise chickens. They love the land just as we love the land. they help us on the property now. I don't know what we'd do without them. They help us disc wood. They help us to They help us to split wood to disc the property. My husband brought his own tractor. It's hard from those pictures to tell, but we live on a very steep hillside. The hillside, actually, all of our property is just steep hills going this way. They live on this end of the property on a separate street. We live on a separate street at this end of the property on a hill. From on top of our hill, we can see seven other residences. None of these belong to our daughter. She is that far away from us. To talk of it, of agricultural land, there's much more agriculture going on her end of the property now than ours. We have about 12 acres of walnuts, which we have been forced to just let go. We keep them pruned, we keep them disced, but it's not profitable for us to harvest the nuts because our land is so steep. We're not big enough to be in the market, really. We have to pay the workers now, and they have to have, you know, there's so many provisions now that they have to have that it's not worthwhile for us to do it. So for the last 3 years, we've just let them go. We let them fall on the ground.
Ms. Carnine, so I want to thank you because your time is up.
My apologies. Can I think of one other thing to say?
We'll come back to you after the public, and you'll have an opportunity to respond.
The only reason we want to split our property is so that she can hold on to 20 acres of it when we are deceased.
Thank you. Does anyone else from the Carnine family want to speak? Please come forward, give us your name for the record. And to be fair, before you start, each person will have a 3 minute. If you want to speak together, you have 3 minutes. If you want to speak separately, each will have a 3 minute. So have you make that decision. And with that, please give us your name for the record.
Okay, we'll speak together, I guess. I'm Julie Vieira. This is my husband, Tom Vieira. We both grew up in Templeton and have lived there our entire life. We both graduated from Temple High School, and it's been our lifelong dream to buy this property, as you can tell. Our goal was simply to raise our two boys with the values acquired from country living. We have been extremely active in 4-H and FFA over the past 10 years, and Tom and I know the importance of ag in our area. We both are currently on the board of the Ag Advisory Committee for Templeton High School. The primary reason our application has been denied is that folks don't like the use of TDCs in ag properties, and they're concerned that it will create a precedence. I understand this concern, but I really don't feel that that boilerplate rejection is appropriate. I think it's the board's responsibility to independently evaluate each project on its merits. I think if you look closely at our application, you'll see we're not trying to change the agricultural nature of this property. In fact, we're hoping to do the exact opposite, to enhance it. I just want to thank you all for your time and listening and considering this request. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, Ms. Larka. Maria Larka. And that's the last request to speak. Anybody from the public at large would like to comment?
Hello. My name is Maria Lorca. I'm from Creston. I'm speaking for Creston Citizens for Agland Preservation. We oppose the use of TDC credits to subdivide agland and ask that you deny this appeal. This project violates and is directly contrary to the intent of the TDC program. We've submitted for the record a letter with supporting attachments and a joint letter with the group Paso Watch, a letter recommending denial by the Templeton Area Advisory Group is in the staff report and also attached to our letter. We ask that all this material be included in the record for this project. These documents include the grand jury report, the Planning Commission recommendation, letters from the impacted advisory councils back through a period of several years, letters from the Ag Department, air pollution control, and findings of fact for other projects, TDCs on ag, all opposed to the use of credits to subdivide ag parcels. If you approve this project, how will you deny the neighbors, all the neighbors who approve of it, the opportunity to split their parcels? You will set a precedent for more subdivision of parcels in an area where growth is exceeding the growth cap, just behind Napomo, this area is, as far as growth, and a severe problem of too many substandard parcels This is the antique subdivision problem that already exists and is a serious problem in this area. Creating more smaller parcels won't help. We hope that the TDC program will be reformed. However, there's no information about those reforms. Nothing has happened to assure us that the makeup and selection of the new committee will be an open and transparent process with public participation in every aspect. Approving this project and overturning the excellent staff work will only encourage more appeals, undermine planning standards, and the work of planning staff. We ask that you support the general plan, restore public confidence, and deny this appeal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Greening?
I'm Eric Greening, and I would like to compliment the applicants. Actually, most times people are trying to split agricultural land. They try to use the argument of lack of viability, but do not apply for a zone change. These folks are actually arguing an intent to remain in agriculture, and I do find that refreshing. Nonetheless, I do believe staff has done excellent work in essentially listing the county policies with which this is problematic, and those are our county policies. They are the framework for planning. They are the general plan. I also would point out that it shouldn't be necessary for a citizens group to supply you with parts of the record that ought to be part of the basis for your decision making. In fact, as you know from my public comment earlier, the minutes even of the advisory committee would be very informative to you. The minutes of the subdivision review board would be informative to you. When you make decisions on appeals, you are essentially continuing a dialogue that has already started somewhere else. And the more you can know about that dialogue, the better. But aside from that, I do believe that staff has done good work in terms of explaining the relevant policies, and so I do encourage you to uphold the staff recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. With that, Ms. Osgood, if you have any final words, but before you come forward, I'm going to give 5 minutes for the entire family, so whoever wants to take advantage of that, you're welcome to come forward and speak your mind, but those minutes will apply for the entire applicants.
I just wanted to, my name's Don Carnine, 4242 Las Tablas. I just wanted to comment on this lady over here from Creston. Where we live, there's so many little tiny parcels. I mean, like at the corner of the White House, that's 1 acre. Next to it, 7 acres. Mine, 40 acres. And you go across the street, 3 acres, 2 acres, 7 acres, 7 acres. You know, it's chump, 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 chump. It's just real chopped up. And see, all we want to do is just help these kids out, you know, and it just seems hard to think that you guys threw these many roadblocks against the public. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else from the family? Okay, seeing none, at this time I will close to the public and bring it back to the Board of Supervisors. Ms. Bianchi?
Yeah, I'd like to hear from a representative from the Ag Commissioner's Office, Mr. Eisensee, if possible.
Yeah, would you please come forward and give us your name for the record and if you care to comment on this project?
Sure. My name is Michael Eisensee from the Agriculture Department. Just briefly, first, one correction for the record in our report, and it was carried forward in the Planning Department's report. I didn't notice it actually until I was reviewing this appeal. There is a misstatement about the soil capability on this site. It states that the soils on this site, that there's 11 acres of Class 2 soil. There is, in fact, there is no acres right now because there's nothing irrigated. There's 11 acres of Class 4 and approximately 30 acres of Class 6 soil on this site. There could be, along the drainage basin, if it were irrigated, about 1 acre of irrigated soil on the site. So just that correction for the record. In general, I believe the viewpoint of our department is well known about the TDC program, that the use of development credits and transferring development credits from one agricultural property to another is not the intent of the program. Specifically, the Ag and Open Space element, Ag Policy 15, states that the policy of TDCs is to protect agricultural resources by guiding development to more suitable areas. And we don't see that guiding development from one agricultural area to another meets that intent. And that in general, when we're looking at subdivision, we also have Agricultural Policy 20 that states that we should be designing subdivisions to ensure the long-term protection of ag resources. And we have standards in our subdivision that look to that set minimum standards. In this case, looking at the soils on the site, the minimum standard for subdivision would be 160 acres per parcel. So we clearly are not meeting the intent of our policies from the standpoint of the Agriculture Department.
Thank you. Any further questions, Ms. Bianchi?
No, I don't have any further questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members of the board wish to make comments or questions at this time?
Yes.
Please, Ms. Bianchi.
Yeah, I have several, actually, so I'll say thank you when I'm all finished. Okay.
I look forward to that.
You know, I agree with the Ag Commissioner's Office that the use of TDCs for splitting agricultural property is not appropriate. And if we choose not to approve this today, that doesn't mean that the property can't be divided at some time in the future. And the more appropriate method, it would seem to me, is to come in during the either to request a general plan amendment on the cycle, we have four of those a year, or wait until the area plan is updated and request it then, which is cheaper. It doesn't cost quite as much for a general plan amendment. And our general plans and our ag and open space element, our cluster ordinance, all of these things have gone through an extensive public comment period. They go to the advisory councils, they go to the planning commission, they come to the board, and if it's, this is in the coastal zone, so you don't have to worry about that. And if it's in the coastal zone, it goes to the coastal commission. There's an extraordinary amount of public input and public comment in our general plans. And when I get a petition from neighbors saying, well, we don't have a problem with this project, I wonder how many of the people who signed the petition are aware of the planning process and actually had become involved in that. And what I don't want to see happen is planning by neighborhood petition. I think that is not a good way to go. The neighbors may not have an objection to it. They may sign the petition, but no one knows why they signed the petition. Do they want to divide their property? Do they not just simply want to insult the neighbors? You know, I'm a good person, I'll just say that, even though I don't really agree with it. You have no idea why the people signed the petition. But it is not in my mind, it's not a valid part of the planning process. And obviously, I'm not going to support this. And those are my reasons why. And you can come back in for a general plan amendment and go through that public process as well. So it's not a end-all, be-all today. Thank you.
You're welcome. Supervisor Ovid.
Thank you. I have a disagreement with probably some of the statements been made now because it's all...
No, you don't disagree with me, Harry.
Well, surely sometimes I've heard you use neighborhood petitions as support, and I also have this one.
Down here's not on. The neighborhood petitions have been used to support things, and what went through my mind when you said about that petition is, well, then what do I have advisory groups around to tell me what's going on and not? But that's not the issue here. I think the discussion that I want to bring up here is how this project is looked at. First of all, I can see both sides of an issue. specifically this one, in talking about the ag and open space ordinance and issues. First of all, we are not destroying the character of the neighborhood, nor are we destroying or deteriorating the use of agriculture because we're drawing a line. We have existing residencies. We have existing uses that are there. This is not changing this. This is not a subdivision for more houses than that. The people applied under the rules of the day. Now, whether we have a discussion later on about other agricultures, properties and that, that's a future board agenda. The current rules are as we saw listed. Also, the approvals or denials on these things do not set precedent. We've always said that, that each one of these stands in its own merit. And of the three that I, this being the third, looking at those that were in agricultural land, many of them were substandard, and actually one of them has kept the land in an agricultural use, where the other one was far beyond. It was only like a 7-acre parcel. The existing condition, I can only say that neither of the pictures that staff showed nor the applicant does justice to what's out there. And that's because if you drive it, which I did again last night, and I've been in this area for years. In fact, one of the petitioners around the corner sells charcoal, and we used to go there all the time and buy it. Probably a use the APCD would not allow anymore, but the rules have changed. There is tremendous amount of housing on each one of those smaller lots, and including the larger ones. There are bigger driveways, there are gates, there is agriculture. And when you look at this, you're going to see, in fact, I know it's not theirs, but there was another walnut orchard down and it was not taken care of, that had Spanish moss on it. So somebody is not taking care of those trees. They've let them go. But the existing condition is that you have these housing available. It is not a new development, nor is there any development plan. It is the existing conditions that are there. And I do disagree with the interpretation. I disagree with the ag department because they tend to look at it as it's only development. Instead of the fact is, what is the consequences of drawing a line? Do we destroy the agricultural use of the property? Do we enhance it, as in this case, which it will be? There is pasture land, but it's all site hill, and it's probably 20-25% slope that's not going to be developed on. I do disagree with the applicants that I would make a recommendation, and I will do so, that no other secondary housings be allowed, so that we do not, again, change the neighborhood. But my issue here is that I think we tend to look at it too much from the negative, and we're not looking at what is real and where are we going to be tomorrow if we allow this to happen. And I see no reason that the use of the TDC in this particular case to allow this subdivision is an appropriate way to go. 2 years ago, even, they could have done this because 2 years ago we changed our land use from 20 acres to 40 acre in ag. Ms. Bianchi's talking about going to another zone adjacent to this property is rural lands. If we go to rural lands, arguments could be made to break it down to tens. Well, the slope, I know, will keep it from doing that. 20 acres. So we're not, you know, if we want to cost the applicants $20,000 or $30,000 more for existence, I guess we could go to rural lands. So as you can see, is I do not have difficulty. And I can even find the finding that the flood hazard is not the developed area. It is outside of it. And I see no harm in the TDC being used on this particular case. And we'll make a motion once we're done with all the conversation.
Supervisor Patterson.
I got my line. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask staff if they would to put the two things up. One is the aerial photo of the site. And I'd like to come back to that one, but first of all that. Can you show us where the two residents are currently and then where the property would be divided?
Right here and here. It's going to go right there.
It's right here. Use your cursor.
It's there. The proper line's going right down that ridge right there.
Okay. Okay.
Excuse me, Supervisor Patterson, that is one of the existing residences.
Mr. Forrester, even though we know who you are, just for the record, always give us your name as you start speaking, please.
I am Nick Forrester with the Planning Department. I'll repeat, Supervisor Patterson, if this mouse would cooperate, there is one of the existing residences. I believe that is the other existing residence on
That's
the property.
That's the Vieira, the one you're on now?
Okay. The applicants could probably best answer that. Okay.
And then again, would you show the potential lot line split?
The parcel map exhibit would probably best demonstrate that.
Okay. And I was wondering if Mr. Eisensee from the Ag Commissioner's Office, looking at this, do you have a handle on the slopes and where the soils are that you discussed?
Mike Eisensee from the Agriculture Department. I do not have a specific soils map with me. I believe that the class 4 soils are primarily where the existing orchard is, the dry farm walnut orchard. And then there is a small portion of that near the house that is on the eastern side. And the hillside that largely divides the property is and comprises the majority of the property, the 30 acres, is the whole center area, the hillside. And it is, I don't know what the slope is. I believe it's around 30% slope.
Okay. So sloping down towards the Vieira residence then is
sloping down in both directions, okay, both to the east and west.
Okay, great. Thank you. I appreciate that. Could you, I have a question. If you put the parcel map, the color one up that you showed earlier, what is the zoning of the surrounding properties? Do you have that? And also, can you give an explanation, or maybe it would be a wild guess as to why all of these other parcels in the area are as small as they are?
Sure. Let me first, once again, for the record, Nick Forrester, let me go back to the land use category map that would probably best demonstrate. There, as you can see, the arrow is pointing to the site. Most of the land in the area is zoned agriculture. There is a small piece to the east of the parcel that is zoned rural lands. And the second part of your question, once again, sir?
It was a speculation as to how all of those small parcels...
Correct. It's my understanding that the land division standards in this county were first put in place in the early 60s. Prior to that, there were minimal regulations regarding the division of land. I believe that these parcels were created prior to those rules being enacted by the Board of Supervisors, but Ms. Griffin may be able to shed more light on the how those parcels came into existence.
Generally, Cammie Griffin, County Planning, generally it looks like what happened is they were deeded properties that have subsequently been lot line adjusted, and that's why they're substantially below the minimum parcel size. There weren't minimum parcel sizes in effect in this county for in the early parts of the
county. I need to clarify one thing. There were allowances in agricultural land because the old zoning started with A1 and went up through A whatever, and there were areas that were allowed in agricultural land to have 1, 5, 10 acres in that. Also, this area was, if I go back far enough in the history, and I know that I'm probably going to make some mistakes, but the Mennonites and families basically settled this area, and this is true with most of the Adelaide, and they did the subdivisions. And we're talking from, probably about 18s into the middle 19s. But these were old family units, and in fact, many of the family units have subdivided up for other members of their families. This was not, as we see with the one-acre pieces and that it were subdivided for speculation or for agricultural support.
Right. Most of these were probably deeded off at a time that was a legal way of creating them.
Well, thank you for that information. And there are a variety of issues here with this particular project, and I've really grappled with the best way to handle this. I do feel, and I've always felt, that San Luis Obispo is blessed to have such a strong and viable agricultural industry, and preserving that is certainly one of my goals. And I know that there are always exceptions to parcel size, to ag capability, and all the rest, but we do have to play by the rules, and I think there's a consensus among everyone that we have heard from in the past year regarding our TDC program that when you allow the transfer of a development credit from agricultural land to agricultural land, you're really not accomplishing the goals of that program. And it's based on that won't support this particular application. However, it was mentioned by planning staff that this is an area of transition where we go out of more urbanized development into the more rural lands, and I think that it would be appropriate perhaps to redesignate this to a proper zoning that would allow the dividing of the property into smaller sizes. But my fear is, Supervisor Obit talks about this isn't precedent setting because we look at each one on its own merits. But every time that we make an exception to our county land use ordinance, then somebody else comes in and asks us to make that exception for them. And so in a way it is setting a precedent that, you know, we need to stand by the codes and the ordinances that we have in place, and we need to honor the public process. And I appreciate what the Vieiras are doing and their sensitivity to agriculture, and I would like to see them continue and have a way to do that, and I certainly hope that they can. And also agriculture, the face of agriculture is changing, and people are finding other ways to make a go of it. I used to farm out in Shandon, and there were 1,000-acre ranches out there that dry land farm. They're not doing that anymore. And, you know, right now we have policies that determine how small a parcel size we can have based on soil types and ability to irrigate and that sort of thing. And we have our land use ordinances, and I think we just need to uphold those and stick to them, because every time we make an exception, we're asked to make another exception. And so having said that, I can't support this proposal using a TDC from ag to divide ag parcels because it's not accomplishing the goal of the program. And if it were to come back with another means of appropriately dividing the land, I would certainly look at that favorably. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Bianchi.
Yeah, I'll make this brief. I would disagree that we're looking ahead when we subdivide ag land like this. It's kind of like the mice nibbling away at the foundation, just a little bit here. Well, this one won't hurt, and a little bit there. Well, that one won't hurt, and pretty soon we've all heard that story about the mice getting rid of a foundation. And I also say that this is precedent setting, because what we're doing is we're using the precedent of smaller parcels created in the past to justify the breakdown of parcels now. And using past mistakes to justify present actions, I don't believe is appropriate. So that concludes my statements.
Supervisor Obit.
Thank you. If there's no other comments.
One more comment, by the
way. Go ahead and do that, and then okay. I'll.
Supervisor Lentil.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Obviously, like a lot of things, there's many sides to several issues here. With respect to my colleague, Supervisor Patterson's comment of playing by the rules, I also think government has to play by the rules. And a concern I have here is that if this started in April, and we've had a great deal of discussion about TDCs, changing those moratoriums and things like that, that if the rules were that when Tarnines were able to submit this process in April, that they were on this path to do this, and all of a sudden now the process or the path gets altered in a way that doesn't send a consistent message for us. And so even though I don't support transferring credits from agriculture or to agriculture for housing, in this case I do think there is a unique situation that the buildings are there, I also agree with Supervisor Ovitz's comment that there's a way to lock this in, which I believe that was the way he was approaching in his motion, proposed motion, that really isn't changing anything. What we're doing is we're dividing a property for a family to have future families or future endeavors there. I have confidence that they will keep the land in probably the best state of agriculture because they are the stewards of the land. They've been there for a while. And I think because of that, I guess I disagree somewhat. Yes, we are setting a precedent, but I think that's what we're supposed to do in government is respond to unique situations. And then here, I've heard a compelling argument that I want to give them the benefit of the doubt, especially since they started in April. Had they start today or a new process tomorrow, and as we further define and the TDC prism evolves, my decision probably will be differently. But I think under the circumstances that I'm going to support Supervisor Ovitz's motion that he's about to make.
Let me just put in my perspective, to bring this back for a general plan amendment, I think there's more of a disadvantage to ag use than going forward with their request as is, because the only way you can put it through general plan amendment is to maybe complement the neighborhood, which is on a smaller acreage, and going back into maybe rural residential, getting rid of agriculture for good forever. This way, hopefully, will be some support to the family to stay on their property and maintain the ag use that they have. With that, Supervisor Ovitz.
Thank you. I just want to take a second to kind of give you a picture of the area that exists now. That, you know, years back, it was pretty much all dry land and cattle. And the next thing I want you to try to picture in your mind is this whole area is basically covered in trees, other than what was cut down many years back and left in not irrigated, it's not even irrigated. And yet what you see today, there is still one large area out there that does safflower, which was not done years back, but it's done today. There's only one or two small areas out there that even continue to do oat hay, and it's not production for oats, it's basically for oat hay, and this is a change. If you look at these other properties that are around it, whether they're 10 or 30s or 10s or 15s, because of the hillside, they're very limited in what they can do. And what you see are 3 to 5 acres of grapes on side hills. There's a new one being planted out there that, again, is going to require hand production. It's not machine done like we see on flat land. And I don't think these things are seen by the pictures even or by the overheads. And one thing that it's a perpetual argument, I guess, or disagreement I have with the agricultural department is we look at agricultural land as land. But we don't look at what it products or produces. And in these small 20-acre pieces and that, I can probably give you a pretty good inventory of how many 5-acre pieces of ground are used for grapes and how many of these people, they're not making their primary living. That's true. They are part of the agricultural industry. They do have to move their product. And this is a changing economy in the terms of the agriculture we have. And specifically in North County, like right now, we're going to see issues with olives. That's a new crop that's coming back that used to be here before. It's now back again. And we're going to see all these different types of agricultural uses. They laughed at one the other day about lavender, but yet people are planting lavender because the oil is what is the primary issue. It's not eating the olives. It's the olive oil. So I would make this motion, first, that we're not setting a precedent. Two is that the finding I would like to make sure is put in there that no new development is in the flood plain. It is all existing development that is outside the flood plain area or floodway, however it's the FEMA map you got. I don't even know how they describe it. And that a condition on the subdivision is that only one primary residence be per lot. And I would move for a tentative approval of the a tentative upholding of the appeal. And move to, I'm going to have to go with staff, since we didn't do a negative. Negative's done on this already, isn't it?
No, we would.
This is the other one we were talking about.
We would need to complete the environmental review, so we recommend April 18th if there's time on the agenda.
I got March 28th. It was 105 minutes.
We'd probably need some more time to make sure that.
The reason is I'm probably not going to be here on the 18th.
We'll do it the week after.
March 28th.
April 4th has 285 minutes.
That would be better.
April 4th, okay. And make the tentative motion move to that date.
Second that.
Motion and a second. A roll call, please.
Mr. Ovitt.
Aye.
Mr. Linthal.
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi.
No.
Mr. Patterson.
No.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please? Would you pass this?
Thank you very much, folks.
The next item is C4, a hearing to consider an appeal by Charles R. Gillum of the Planning Commission's decision to approve the application of SBC for a development plan variance coastal development permit located at 6513 Street in the community of Cayuga, 2nd District. Recommend denial of the appeal.
Thank you. Would that be Ms. Brown? You need to turn on that. Yeah, she got it for you.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Sherry Brown, planning staff. The project before you today is a request by SBC to allow a new emergency generator in the required front setback. The project site is located on 13th Street in the community of Cayucas. The site is zoned residential single family and is surrounded by single family residences. This slide shows the land use category map. And this side shows the aerial. As you can see, it is surrounded by residential development. The site supports a telephone switching facility, and the emergency generator is needed to maintain telephone service in the event of an emergency or a power outage. These slides show the existing site plan and elevations of the building. And these are some site photos. This is what the SBC building looks like from 13th Street. And this is a neighboring residence to the west. And this is a neighboring residence to the east. And another shot from another angle of the site of the road. Initially, SBC proposed three other locations for the emergency generator, two in the rear of the site and one on the east side. As these two slides show, this is alternatives one and two, and this was the first alternative to put it in the side yard here, and this was alternative two, which is kind of in a similar place but more in the rear. This is alternative three, which actually proposed the generator to be located right in this area. These proposed locations would be in close proximity to neighbors' bedrooms and backyards. In order to better fit into the existing residential neighborhood, the applicant proposed locating the emergency generator in the front setback. The Cayuga Citizens Advisory Council reviewed this project on three occasions: October 2004, June 2004, and August 2005. Many concerns were brought forth at these meetings by neighbors and the advisory council. The applicant addressed these issues and received support from the advisory in August of 2005. Oops. These slides actually show the proposed location of the generator, which is in the front setback, and this is where it would be. They're also proposing some landscaping and painting the building and making it fit more into a neighborhood residential context. The project was approved on November 30th by the Planning Commission and then appealed by Charles Gillum. The issues of appeal are as follows. Health, safety, and financial welfare. The appellant believes that the project will sacrifice the health, safety, and financial welfare of the area residents. the project is required to meet all health and safety requirements of the Air Pollution Control District and the Environmental Health Department. In addition, the project is required to submit an environmental quality assurance program covering all aspects of construction and operation. This program will include a schedule and plan for monitoring and demonstrating compliance with all conditions of approval. With regard to financial welfare, the Planning Department does not review projects for individual effects on property values. The second appeal issue is the appellant believes the existing emergency generator at their site was smaller than the one currently being proposed. The existing generator is over 30 years old and does not meet current safety standards. In order to meet current demand and future growth projections, the new generator needs to be larger than the existing generator and will not fit into the current, not fit into the location where the current generator is housed. The third appeal issue is the appellant believes that the required variance is in itself an indication of the inappropriate size and location of the generator. The variance is not dictated by the size of the generator. As I showed in the previous slides, there were three other locations on the site that did not require a variance. However, they were closer to residential bedrooms and backyards. The neighboring property owners were concerned about those locations and about noise and aesthetic issues. In order to better fit into the existing residential neighborhood, the applicant proposed locating the generator in the front setback to allow for an increased buffer for all surrounding residential properties. And finally, the last appeal issue is the appellant states that the proposed generator is located approximately 15 feet from his living room. The location of the SBC telephone switching facility is located in a residential neighborhood and in close proximity to residents on all four sides. Given the location of the switching facility, it's inevitable that the generator will be relatively close to residences. Other alternative locations initially proposed were closer to the residences than what is now being proposed. Staff has received a number of letters from concerned neighbors before the Planning Commission hearing, and we tried to address those issues at that hearing. I did receive one letter yesterday, which I'll have Mike hand out to you. Many of the concerns that were brought up in this recent letter were brought forth at the Planning Commission hearing, and I think we've addressed a lot of the issues in the conditions of approval. Staff recommends denying the appeal, adopting the mitigated negative declaration, and approving the variance development plan, coastal development plan, based on the findings in Exhibits A and B and the conditions in Exhibit C. And I'm available for any questions.
Ms. Brown, thank you. How is it that the commercial use end up in a residential area?
Well, the switching facility has been there since the 60s. I don't know why it was located there, but it is an allowed use. It's a special use, but it's I think just being that it was there back in the 60s, there weren't as many residences. It was more of a part-time community. And so I don't think there was too much opposition to it at that point.
Now, bigger generators, the first thing comes to mind that they're noisier, but we do have the noise ordinance, and probably with today's technology, they have a better exhaust system. Have we heard these new generators as how loud they are, or there is any input to us as how noisy they are?
We had, since it's not at the site right now, we required that they have a noise analyst look at the actual site and figure out what the ambient noise level is. And the ambient noise level is actually exceeds our ordinance requirements. And in cases like that, no new noise sources can go above one above ambient. And so SBC is enclosing the generator, and the enclosure will reduce the noise level. They have their noise analysts here, along with the manufacturer of the enclosure here, to answer any questions about the noise.
I see in your conditions you have landscaping and others, but how about the enclosure of the generator, the coloring of the container? Are there any recommendation from us to be sure that it fits the house and or the neighborhood, the coloring?
Well, condition number five, the project will be consistent with the landscape plan and elevations dated July 27, 2005. I believe that condition will ensure that it's consistent with the slide that I showed you of the painted building with landscaping around it.
We can go to the next page to condition number 18.
Oh.
And it says that the testing will occur once a month for 1 hour and once a year for 5 hours, but doesn't satisfy me and might satisfy the neighborhood if we had hours of testing rather than to be sure that it's maybe during the daytime hours between 9 to 4, 9 to 5, 10 to 4.
Well, in that...
It's not after sleeping hours or early morning hours. I know when there's an emergency, there's an emergency. We all want to be able to dial 911 and go through. But since it's testing only, can we condition those hours? And I'm asking you the question. I hope the applicants and appellants will be able to respond to that as well.
In condition number 18, the last part of it says, at a time coordinated with the adjacent neighbors. So that's...
I realize that, but still doesn't satisfy me that anybody can take that and translate it in their own means and of being considerate. And I'd rather kind of minimize that thought into a given hours, then it's much clearer. We'll still do that, but if there was between certain hours, then it's more satisfactory, at least for me, to think that a testing cannot take place after midnight. It's a testing. It's not, if emergency, we can also understand that, but if it's just testing, it could be within the working hours where everybody is at work, and it's not during the hours that somebody is resting or going to bed or hasn't woken up that morning yet.
We could definitely modify that condition to add a time frame.
Okay. Well, let's go through this and see what else we hear from other supervisors. You're welcome to make comments and questions at this time, Ms. Bianchi.
Yeah, the time coordination with the neighbors is in case some neighbors work at night and sleep in the daytime. So there needs to be, and that's why this statement is coordinated with the neighbors, to make sure that the time that it's tested, you know, doesn't interfere with any of the neighbors and their sleep patterns, because they're not all working during the day and sleeping at night.
I understand that, but then if you have somebody that works at night, sleeps during the day, and the next neighbor works during the day and sleeps at night, then when do you test? So, Supervisor Lentil?
Yes, I'd like to just add on to that. I think you can have both. You can say generally we test these between 8 and 5, Monday through Friday, but we will coordinate with the neighbors for specific needs, and I think that addresses everybody's concern here, because there is a balance, and I want to give them the enough flexibility to deal if there's a unique situation in that neighborhood. But also I think it's important to say that most people and most businesses test things during the day. You're not going to go down there at midnight. They're not going to pay time and a half for someone to go down there and do that. So I think if you just add that line in there and keep the coordinated with adjacent neighbors, you can cover both of the issues.
Okay.
Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Brown, the letter that you just...
The red one.
Excuse me. The letter you just handed out addresses operational issues more so than the noise. She talks about having lived in the vicinity and having problems with erosion from water being pumped from the site, and also the comings and goings of of the trucks, and she has contacted SBC and gotten no response or no resolution. What recourse do residents have if there is a problem with the operation of the facility? And maybe apply it to, you know, meeting the conditions to have the emergency generator installed and upsized and all of that. What do residents do if there's a problem? Do they call the county? Do they call SBC? What do they do?
Well, it depends on what the problem is. If they're not meeting their conditions of approval, then they should be calling the county, and we can verify or go through an enforcement procedure if that's appropriate. If there's a problem with the actual operation, an emergency, or it's not working correctly, condition number 21 on page C413 requires that the applicant post both emergency and non-emergency phone numbers on the building so that there is a contact number for neighbors. At the Planning Commission meeting, there were a few people that had concerns about drainage, which also was brought up in this letter. And we did add a condition concerning drainage, and that's condition number 4. That deals with a drainage plan. At the time of application for construction permits, the applicant shall submit a drainage plan for the entire site that shall show removal of impervious surfaces to the maximum extent feasible for review and approval by the County Public Works Department. So I know she brought up that issue, the water pumping, and that was brought up by several other neighbors. But I'm hoping that the actual numbers being posted will also help with other issues that come up, because it's not really a manned facility. That's really the only way that they can contact SBC and get somebody to respond to their issues.
Okay. Thank you.
At this time, I'll go to the applicant, Mr. Charles Gilm. If you come forward, please, and give us your name for the record, and you have 10 minutes to tell us, share your concern with us.
Good morning. My name is Charles Gillum. I'm here due to an appeal of the Planning Commission's approval of the SBC generator project. And I'm the homeowner and resident of 22 years of the property directly adjacent to the east of the SBC proposed project. As in my complaint, the proposed generator is going to be about, or literally 16 feet from my living room. And a little history on this, dealing with these, with SBC, is back in May of 2004, I started on a real frustrating battle to prevent a 9-foot wide by 21 foot long by 11 foot high diesel powered generator being placed alongside my home within 42 inches of my property line. I battled for about 3 months. SBC went right along with their plans and plopped that generator down right next to my house. I could literally touch it from my back deck. Back then, I finally got the help of Art Trinidad, the chief code enforcer for the county, and he came out, stopped the project, told me not to worry, it was totally out of compliance. The generator was to be inside the building, and the generator was removed, which is an obvious indication that it's totally inappropriate for that area. And here I am still a year and a half later fighting the same issue. The basis for appeal to the Planning Commission were numerous and disconcerting. Area residents and myself have gone to 4 Cayucas Advisory Committee meetings, 1 Planning Commission meeting, signed petitions, wrote telephone letters, or wrote letters and made several telephone calls with legitimate issues of protest. And the The progression of the Cayucas Advisory Committee meetings went from consideration as to whether or not the generator should go in there, and a lot of recommendations were made to SBC. The next meeting we had, we were talking about what color they were going to paint it. We just went from 0 to 60 on this whole thing. A lot of the forms here for application state that this generator is needed to operate the facility, giving the impression that it needs to operate the existing facility. The generator that's been there the whole time I've lived in that home is about the size of this podium. The one they're putting in is the size of a freight train. And they've already admitted it's for growth, and in Cayucas Advisory Committee meetings, SBC stated that they would have the ability to lease space to other companies, whatever that means. The reason I'm standing here alone is because of the apathy of my neighbors. They have signed their petitions, they wrote letters, and none of my neighbors, by the way, work for SBC or are on the Cayucas Advisory Committee, and they feel that the hopelessness of fighting SBC and Slo County on this project. And I'll quickly go over the issues of that this project jeopardizes the health and financial welfare of myself and neighbors based on the following. The noise pollution. Pollution from the generator will be disruptive and irritating. We talked about the testing. We also have to consider the fact that if the power goes off for 24 hours, I got this thing shaking my windows loose for 24 hours. The noise engineers have been allowed to determine that the ambient noise levels of 13th Street are higher than the norm of 50 decibels, and the generator will be allowed to be 1 decibel over the ambient noise level of 13th Street, which is determined to be 56 decibels. SBC admitted to taking readings for these ambient noise levels on trash day. We've got a trash truck and a recycle truck that stop at that site, the proposed site, for several minutes, and when they are there, they literally shake the windows of my home. The SBC claims that the trucks have no significant effect on the ambient noise levels they took. However, they say that the reason that 13th Street is higher is due to Highway 1 and Cayucas rush hour. Highway 1 is about 160 yards from the proposed site, and this is not I-5, this is Highway 1. And my home is located between the proposed site and Highway 1, and at night I can hear sea lions on a buoy a mile out on the ocean. This is a quiet neighborhood. Additionally, several years ago, large cooling fans were installed at the rear of the SBC building. I complained of that with no success. These fans come on and off during the summertime, three large cooling fans. And a recent issue that was brought up is to install sump pumps at the rear of the property to clean up a drainage mess that's been created. We're being told now that a diesel generator the size of a freight train, sump pumps combined with the fans are all perfectly compatible in this tightly spaced, quiet coastal neighborhood. Our homes are close together. The aesthetics of the project is, without dispute, it'll be an eyesore. The generator comes enclosed in an 11 foot high by 21 foot long by 9 foot wide metal box. It resembles a sea train, and there's plans to stucco it, put trellises on it, vines, whatnot, and the bottom line is you're not going to be able to make a silk purse out of this project, and it will be right out front on the street. This building was once fairly non-assuming, and it's been deceptively growing over the years with the addition of permanent galvanized ladders to the roof, galvanized outbuilding in the back of the property, vent pipes for a 1,500-gallon underground diesel fuel tank that's already been installed a year and a half ago, and the cooling fans, etc. The other issue that I have is, currently we have warning signs of corrosive materials on the property. We've had storage of hazardous barrels marked hazardous waste on the property. The 1,500-gallon diesel fuel tank, which was put approximately 4 feet from my property, and we can expect diesel fumes, regardless of the EPA guidelines. I'm sure diesel trucks going down the highway meet those EPA guidelines, and if it was sitting in my driveway running for 5 hours, it would be obnoxious. And in ending, I'd just like to say this project would be a noxious eyesore, which will adversely affect the health, quality of life, and financial welfare of myself and neighbors in the area. The attempts to expand this site goes on and on. The complaints and objections against this project are varied and numerous and indicate that this site has outlived its utility given the surrounding environment. I may want to sell my home someday or enjoy its value, any equity I build. However, I'll be real hard-pressed to find someone who wants to live next to an up-and-coming industrial complex, and that's what it's becoming to look like. I'm asking the Board of Supervisors to stop this project and at the very least advise SBC to downsize the generator to a unit similar claim technology, which will fit inside of the existing building, and use some insight on as to locations of their future growth plans. And essentially, that's it. I'd like to end by saying thank you. I have to run off to work. Please don't consider my leaving lack of interest or concern over the project. I won't be able to stay for the rest of the hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have a representative from SBC that would like to address the board at this time? And we'll give you the same 10 minutes to address the board, please, if you'll give us your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is David Wagner, Garcia Wagner and Associates Architects, working for SBC on this project. Good morning or good afternoon, I'm not sure which it is to all of you today.
Almost afternoon.
Thank Carrie for her presentation on the project. As you know, and as was mentioned, the purpose of this project is to provide a standby engine. It is there to handle telephone service if there is a power outage. It's not normally running. It'll only come on when there's a power outage. The only other time are the testing sequences that we talked about, the 1 hour per month. As far as the hours go, conferring with SBC a few moments ago, the recommendation for the added phraseology under condition number 21 is fine. It's frustrating for me as an architect on this project to have come, it has been a long time, and I'm sorry that there's Mr. Gillum continues to be very upset with this. What we're trying to do is to find a location where we can not only comply with the law that requires us to have this generator on site, but do it in a fashion that we can integrate with the neighborhood. I think putting it on the front of the building and integrating it with the structure architecturally, which is what we're trying to show in our drawings, will be successful. We have added landscaping. We have stepped up to addressing many of the items that are essentially have been deferred on the site. We're trying to get the whole building painted. We're going to put a new fence around the building, new gates on either side with pillars. During the course of, I guess it was just prior to the Planning Commission meeting, we became aware of the drainage problem for some of the neighbors. So we immediately took care of initiating a design to add that into the project. That was not an issue for us. We wanted to solve that. We weren't aware, our design team wasn't aware, that water was going from the rear of the site onto the adjacent properties. One thing. I know there's a lot of reference to the size of this unit. The generator is actually fairly small. It's not small enough to go inside the building, but it's a lot smaller than the container that is being described to you. The container, which is roughly 200 square foot, in plan view, is there for acoustical reasons. That is the enclosure. That's what we're putting there in order to mitigate the sound, to bring the sound down to the levels that are appropriate for the site. The other clarification I wanted to add is, as far as the encroachment goes, or the variance aspect of this goes, there's just a very small portion of the container which goes over the setback line. It's not the entire container. The only part that goes over the encroachment line or the setback line is about 9 square feet. It's a little triangle because the line is a bit askew. So I have today with me our two representatives from SBC. We also have a gentleman who's in charge of the generator manufacturer and installation and the enclosure. And we have our acoustical consultant, our county-recommended acoustical consultant here. I'm not sure what the protocol is as far as having them respond to your questions or relative to timing.
They're all welcome to come forward, and as we ask questions, whoever the appropriate person is within the time we have given you will can introduce themselves and us and answer the questions. So you're welcome to introduce them and encourage them. I have a couple of questions that might require their technical input. Let me ask them and see who you're going to
link
to.
Very good.
Obviously, since it's diesel, even though diesel is less poisonous than gasoline, was there any consideration to run it on natural gas?
You know, I do think that question came up, but the best person to answer that will be Jerry Rogers from Power Generation Systems, if I could ask him to approach and maybe help out here in answering this.
And the reason I asked that question, because obviously, regardless of the poison level, you have the fumes, right, and the smell is much stronger. And if the depends how your exhaust system is added to it and the way the wind blows, and how would it impact the neighbor if it's Mr. Gillum or others?
I'm Jerry Rogers with Power Generation and Engineering. To address the issue of natural gas or propane over diesel, there's really not a natural gas line there that I know of. But the big thing that needs to be understood is that in today's environmental issues and us being able to pass the environmental laws that are set forth by the air quality, what we found is that we cannot clean up the NOx without a lot of additional scrubbing from natural gas. People think it's really clean, and in a lot of ways it is really clean, but it also has a very high NOx issue, and you get into where you have to scrub it. The second thing is that a natural gas engine would be actually quite a bit larger than the diesel. The diesel produces quite a bit more power for its given size. That said, the enclosure is quite large, so that really makes very little difference in this case. But the big thing is that this particular diesel engine that being put into this project now meets the Tier 2, and I believe it'll even be Tier 3. So that's the latest and cleanest possible engine that's available. In addition to that, SBC has started a plan to provide what's called a soot scrubber and a catalytic converter for all their diesels. In effect, you can stick your nose in the end of the tailpipe and smell it, and you don't smell anything other than heat. And, you know, there's very little odor at all. So there's nothing comes out the tailpipe that you actually see. To say that there's no pollutants comes out the tailpipe, no, there certainly is. There still is.
I'm sure the APCD has something to say about that as well, the air pollution control
district. Right. The engine will be beyond what the air quality district will require.
There was a concern about the fans. Are the fans located inside to cool off the generators or on the outside?
The fans that the applicant was referring to have to do with condenser fans for air conditioning that are in the rear of the building. As far as the generator goes, there will be a fan inside the enclosure, and it will be extremely quiet. If a fan was sitting out running without any enclosure around it, it would be in the 55 to 60 dBA range, but in fact it will actually be enclosed within the enclosure around with 8 inches of sounding material around it. So, and there's also ducting that's connected to it.
Now, because it's how close it is to the neighbor, and I can imagine an equipment of that size running, what are you doing to lessen the vibration that can impact the nearby residents?
Okay, what really happens here is this is an extremely heavy piece of equipment when it's finished. It has walls that are 8 inches thick, and the walls are constructed of some various materials, but I'll give you an idea. The beginning is that there's more than an eighth inch of stainless steel in the walls, Next to that is a 2 inches of mineral wool or rock wool. Then be the next section of that would be 5/8 of what we call mineral rock, which is basically a green board sheet rock. Next, there's 2 more inches of glass. Then there's another 5/8 inches of green board. Then there's another 2 inches of glass. And then on top of that is an acoustical perforated waffled aluminum. And all of that's held in place by a pin that goes completely through it and then attaches itself to, is welded to the stainless. The reason the pin is there is there's no continuing metal through that wall, so there's no vibration. So it's a suspended wall. And that's also true of the ceiling.
That has been
a process we developed about 20 years ago.
And that has been tested and satisfactory?
It has been tested, and in fact, there's more than 200 sites with SBC in the state of California that have that system.
Is this an absolute must that you go to this size and not consider something smaller? Is it according to the growth in the area or what you expect in the future to be?
Well, there's a size limit on when we're dealing with getting to the, it's a very low dB that's being asked here to be produced. And to get to this, to the lower dB levels, it's necessary to put that kind of material in and also to have long enough ducts so that the air discharge and the air intakes are will attenuate the sound.
Thank you. Supervisor Lentil.
Thank you. I think you answered a part of my question, Mr. Rogers, but I want to be sure we're clear. The proposed generator you're putting in is going to have a catalytic converter on it, and it will be to Tier 2 levels or Tier 3?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Supervisor Bianchi.
Yeah, I would like, I've been through all 4 advisory council meetings and other meetings, so if I ask questions, it's just because for the education of the board. But I would like to have someone from SBC discuss why it has to be at this particular, on this particular lot and not outside of town.
Looks like they're debating.
Because I think that's a really important question.
Certainly.
The board needs to know the answer.
This is Jeffrey Runnels from SBC.
And I might add that all of these questions were asked at the advisory council meetings as well.
Afternoon, and hopefully I can address your question.
Your name for the record, please.
Jeffrey Runnels, SBC. The question, for clarification purposes, was why does the site have to be there, or why does the engine have to be there?
No, why can't the entire site be somewhere out of town?
Okay, I'm not a network specialist, but I do have a rudimentary understanding of what it takes to move the site. The best way that I can explain it to you, and hopefully this works, is picture a spider web with the central office sitting in the center and the components of the web spreading out, getting thinner as you get wider, and it ties to other webs. In order to move the building, which, and this is where I think your question is going, you've got to shift that whole spider web. In this particular case, that spider web is predominantly underground. So that means tearing up streets, moving and resizing conduits and underground facilities, getting new right-of-ways. There's a distance component between adjacent offices, and I'm not sure what that is, quite honestly. I know that it was spelled out by the network folks during our the advisory council questionnaire. Does that help?
Yes, that answers the question, that it would be extraordinarily difficult to put this site out of town because it would, you know, it would have a detrimental effect on the community as well as on SBC.
Right.
And also, this is a system that feeds the entire North Coast as far as emergency communications, telephone landlines.
That's correct. It's part of a larger system. It does not stand alone.
Right. So that when we have an earthquake and my power goes out, I can always use my landline. And that I do appreciate.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't see anyone from the general public who wanted to comment on this issue. We usually go back to the appellant for rebuttal, but he had to leave. Any final words from any of the SBC folks? Thank you. Bring it back to the supervisors for further discussion and or a motion. Supervisor Bianchi?
Yes, at the advisory council meetings, as I said, all of these questions just about were asked at the advisory council meeting, and the land use committee, I believe, at the from Cayucas advisory council meeting met with SBC and made every effort to try to accommodate all of the neighbors' concerns. And actually, this is probably the only location on that small piece of property, because if they put it on the sides, then, as Mr. Gillum said, you could reach out your kitchen or bedroom window, whichever it happens to be, and touch the thing. You know, it's a very constrained site, and I believe that although I understand the concern of the neighbors, I really do, that this is about the best that can be done with this project on this site. And so are there any other lights?
It's yours.
Okay. I would move staff recommendation.
Second.
A motion and a second. Roll call, please.
I'm sorry. Carrie Brown, did you want me to read that change condition number 18 into the record?
Yes. Okay. And with the change to condition number 18.
Yeah. Okay, and I'll read that now. The emergency generator will only be operated for emergency purposes, and testing will occur once a month for 1 hour and once a year for 5 hours for annual maintenance and run, at a time between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m., coordinated with the adjacent neighbors.
Okay, thank you very much, and thanks for reminding me. Okay.
Thank you.
I'll second.
There was a second already, and I'm going to support even though I sympathize with the neighbors, and that's life. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bianchi.
Yes.
Mr. Lenthal.
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt.
Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye. Thank you. With that, the next item is a closed session. Does anyone from the public would like to comment on the closed session items? Seeing none, bring it back to Mr. Lindholm.
Mr. Chair, the board will meet in closed session on the items which were listed on the agenda.
Thank you. Would that be upstairs or downstairs?
Upstairs,
I presume. Okay. Thank you. We'll adjourn to closed session and reappear at 2 p.m.